Good evening. My name is Mark Laredo, Counselor at Large from Ward 7, Chair of the Land Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. We are doing audio tape this evening. I'm going to read into the record what what we have on our agenda. We essentially have two items on the agenda, both relating to what is commonly referred to as the OAR project. I'll take a moment to introduce my colleagues who are here, and then we're going to get right to the presentation. I'll provide a very quick overview of how we're going to proceed this evening, and then we'll get right to work. We will finish no later than 10 o'clock this evening. I actually anticipate that we'll probably finish a little bit earlier, but no later than 10. So we have two items on the docket. The first is 180-16. Petition to rezone the OAR block to Mixed Use 4 by Mark Newtonville, LLC. This is a portion of land located at Walnut Street and Washington Street in Ward 2 in Newton. The second item is 179-16, special permit petition for the OAR building at Walnut and Washington Street, again by Mark Newtonville, LLC. There's an array of requests being made as part of this special permit. I won't read them all. Again, this is at 241-261 Walnut Street, 845-875 Washington Street, 0-22 Bailey Place, 6-22 Washington Terrace, all in Ward 2 in Newtonville. So with me this evening, I have my colleagues from the City Council, Councilor Rick Lipoff. To my immediate left is Councilor at Large from Ward 8. Next to him is Councilor Jim Carter, Councilor at Large from Ward 3. Next to Councilor Carter is Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5, all members of the committee. And then three other councilors who are not members of the committee, Councilor Susan Albright, Councilor at Large from Ward 2, Councilor Ruth Ann Fuller, Councilor at Large from Ward 7, and Councilor Emily Norton, Ward Councilor from Ward 2. I note that my colleague, Councilor Jake Auchincloss, has been delayed by some work commitments. I do not know if he's going to be able to join us this evening. We have from the legal department Rita Young and Robert Roddick. We have Alexander Anand from the planning department, and we have Nadia Khan from the city clerk's office, who's our committee clerk. Jonathan, do you want to just introduce yourself and your colleague? Great. Those are two members of the planning board. And are you going to have some announcement then about what you're going to do? Or are you here for observation? Okay. Just so we're clear, there's going to be some procedural work that we're going to do first, and then I'm going to call upon Steve Brookbinder, the counselor for the petitioner. The focus this evening will be on answering a few additional questions that are out there, but there are two, or at least an additional vision of what this project might look like that's going to be presented for our review and discussion and comment this evening. Once we have the presentation from the petitioner, which I anticipate will be about 20 minutes to half an hour, is that right, Attorney Buckbinder? About right? Okay. I'm going to have a very brief commentary by the planning department. Again, I'm going to rather than take questions from our colleagues, and I'm sure you'll have some, perhaps many. I'm going to take comment from the public. I have given the Newtonville Area Council approximately 15 to 20 minutes to do a more formal presentation. Everyone else will be ample opportunity to speak. Very simple requirements when you speak. You come up to the podium, you state your name, you state your address, and I really ask you to keep your remarks, each oral remarks, to 3 minutes or less so that we have an opportunity for everyone to get heard. I will ask as a matter of courtesy that we take people who have not spoken to a public hearing on this matter first, just so that at least everyone gets an initial turn. Well, certainly I anticipate having plenty of time for others who wish to speak to have an opportunity to do so. The public hearing will remain open after this evening, so there'll be ample opportunity for folks to be heard at a later date. We always take written comments. We've received Many are ready. They get sent to our committee clerk, who's then charged and does circulate them to all members of the committee. So there's no need to write to each of us individually. If you direct comments to Ms. Khan, she makes sure we get all the information. So with that said, Ms. Young, we have some procedural things we need to grapple with first. Okay. Could you just grab the microphone, make sure I get these right?
The major procedural issue we need to address tonight is going to be the request, which was filed in writing with David Olson with a copy to the committee by the petitioner to withdraw, a request to withdraw without prejudice the rezoning and refile immediately the rezoning. There were some technical issues that called into question whether there had been appropriate notice in all respects, and without agreeing or disagreeing with that challenge, the petitioner has decided the better course of action is to withdraw and to refile immediately. That does require a vote of the Land Use Committee and the City Council to allow the withdrawal without prejudice, and it would be going to the City Council next Monday. I believe also the Planning Board is going to be commenced holding its own hearings, not hearings with the Land Use Committee, because of the difficulty of making their schedules jive with the Land Use Committee's hearing in terms of the rezoning. But I'll let the Planning Board discuss that.
Go ahead. Do you have a microphone there?
Okay.
All right. Please do.
And the Planning Board. We've appointed also a kind of a committee of the whole or the part to be observers in the proceedings when we're not officially in a joint hearing, and we intend to also hold our own joint hearing
However the Planning Board wants to do it, but I just remember that you need to keep your record clean, and I'm sure you will be doing that. And the last point in terms of the rezoning is so that those people who have filed protests, the petitioner has agreed to waive any objection to having those protests be brought forward in terms of this rezoning, so that those individuals who have filed protests to date do not have to refile against this new rezoning. Again, that's not acknowledging the validity or not of the protest, but just simply that you don't have to refile the protest that you filed to date, and that the entire record, oral and written, which has been submitted to date, both by the public and by the petitioner, is going to come forward for this rezoning.
And I'm going to ask Attorney Bookbinder, when he steps up to the podium, just for the record, to affirmatively make that representation so there's no doubt about it. It's clear on the record. We've been joined by Councillor Scott Lennon, a Councillor at Large from Ward 1, a member of the committee and President of the City Council. So with that, Attorney Bookbinder, why don't we come up first, because I think you need to make a formal request for withdrawal, and then we need to act on it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, members of the Planning Board. For the record, my name is Stephen Bookbinder. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Schlesinger and Bookbinder, with offices at 1200 Walnut Street in Newton Highland. As Associate City Solicitor Young just stated, on Friday, October 28th, I filed with David Olson, City Clerk, a request to withdraw the pending request for zone change without prejudice and to refile a new one in its place. Without getting into a lot of detail, I think I'll just give you a few brief notes. We feel that the notice legally was sufficient, but it did have certain shortcomings, I call them. There were incomplete references to all of the properties. There were also some issues raised with respect to the propriety of rezoning in Washington Terrace. And in addition, the proceedings with the Planning Board have been a little uneven in terms of having a quorum. And we just felt, in discussion with the Law Department, the best thing to do would be to refile, re-advertise by publication notice, and clear all that up. As Attorney Young has stated, we've made it very clear in this letter, and I will state on the record, that the zoning protest filed with respect to this matter, from our point of view, that stands, and we don't necessarily agree with it, but we do not object to its being carried over under these circumstances. And likewise, I concur that all of the testimony to date, both oral and written, should be incorporated, with your permission, into the record. so that we don't have to rehash things that have gone on before.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to, at this point, entertain a motion from a member of the committee to accept the request for withdrawal with the, and just so we're clear on the record, with the additional stipulations made by counsel, that all matters that were part of the prior proceedings, whether they're objections to the petitions or any prior testimony, will be deemed to be part of the record. So with that, do I have a motion by Councillor Lipoff? I do. All in favor of approval of the request for withdrawal without prejudice with the conditions? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 in favor, none opposed. That passes. Do you have a commentary from this?
I was just going to note for the record that the Planning and Development Board will be holding their meeting on the rezoning at the regularly scheduled meeting on December 5th at 7:30 so that the public's aware of that.
Good. Thank you very much for that. It's helpful. All right. So with that procedural work out of the way, why don't you begin your presentation for the evening?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We're going to focus tonight on 4 points. First, Randy Hart will address some of the issues which have been raised by the public respecting transportation issues. I anticipate that will be very brief. Then, a number of issues have been raised, in many of which by Council Crosley, respecting sustainability. And as a result, we've brought on board Lauren Bowman, a consultant in the field, as a new member of our development team, and she will be addressing matters of sustainability this evening. Next, I'm going to discuss why the petitioner believes that a zone change is appropriate in this instance, and then I think we'll get to the probably the meat of the agenda, as the chairman alluded to, which is that Damian Chaviano will review 2 alternative designs which we submitted last Friday. Damian will go into those in greater detail, but essentially he's giving you an option A, which was a combination 5-story/4-story proposal, and an option B, which is an all 4-story proposal, and he will go through those with you. I do want to address a few housekeeping items briefly. Our next scheduled public hearing, as I understand it, is on November 29th. At that time, the petitioner will present its proposal for mitigation measures covering off-site mitigation measures, and will also review the overall benefits that we think this project achieves. We'll also be prepared at that time to discuss any final design revisions, and the hope is tonight that we will get some feedback, both from you and members of the public, on the 2 alternative options. I also wanted to note that an issue had been raised with respect to the use of Washington Terrace. The petitioner owns and controls all of Washington Terrace, with the exception of the parcel used by the Postal Service. We have reached out to the owner of the premises at 891-897 Washington Street, which in turn leases that space to the Postal Service, in order to discuss proposed improvements to Washington Terrace. We want to make it clear to both the Postal Service and to its landlord that the proposed development will not adversely affect the operations of the post office. In fact, we believe that the improvements we've proposed will actually enhance the operations and make their mission easier. Those discussions are ongoing, and we'll keep you apprised of the same. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Randy.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Hart.
Good evening.
No slides? I can work without slides. No problem.
Working on it.
Really, I can manage fine.
While you're starting, we get the technical stuff up, great.
Go ahead. Well, good evening. I'm Randy Hart with Vanessa Hangin and Brough from VHD. We're going to talk very quickly about 2 things tonight. I'm going to remind everybody about the transportation improvements that are being proposed and which we just met on in another room into the traffic simulation. And then I'm going to very quickly touch on a handful of the comments that were made in the Neighborhoods for Better Newtonville comment letter dated October 26th. I'm not going to go through comment by comment because it would take a very long time, but I've picked 5 or 6 that I wanted to address very quickly for you. So in terms of the improvements for the project, as I've said to you in the past,
We're proposing to do a number of things, first of which is to upgrade the existing traffic signal at Washington and Walnut Street, upgrade it to a modern-day traffic signal capable of multiple timing and phasing plans. We plan to add a lane on the southbound Walnut Street approach to create a two-lane section where it's one-lane section today. We plan to put the bump outs on each of the four corners of the intersection to protect on-street parking and to also shorten the distance of crossing for pedestrians on all movements through the intersection. We also are proposing to consolidate substantially the existing access today. There are 6 points of access to the site. Under the proposed condition, it will be reduced down to 2, one on Walnut Street and the second on Washington at Washington Terrace. With that, I jump right into the comment letter. And again, I'm not going to comment on all of the comments, but I've picked a handful to address here tonight. So I'm going to read you the comments first and then give you my response. The first comment says, according to their report, they collected data based on an automatic traffic recorder count conducted on November 19, 2015. In other words, they collected data for one single day. That is true that a single day of data was collected, but in addition to an automatic traffic recorder count, manual turning movement counts and pedestrian movement counts were conducted at all 9 study area intersections, so it wasn't just an automatic traffic count. In terms of typical industry practice, a single day of count is what MassDOT requires. In fact, the TIA guidelines from MassDOT say that traffic counts should be conducted on a typical weekday. They require a Tuesday, Wednesday, or a Thursday when school is in session, and there are no holidays falling during that week. The counts conducted by this project meet all of those requirements. We also looked at the data that we collected and put it against the data collected by CTPS as part of their corridor-wide study. They collected data in April. We collected in November. If you look at the two at Washington and Walnut, they're almost identical. They're pretty darn close. So a fairly good representation. The other thing I want to say is if you look at the recent traffic studies also done in this area by Court Street Development, by Austin Street Development, Garden Remedies Development, and by CTPS as part of their corridor-wide study, they all rely on a single day of data for the purposes of traffic operational analyses. What we did is exactly what we were supposed to do based on the guidelines that are put forward. The second comment says that a 60-unit building has been approved by the city for 28 Austin Street. This location is a mere 0.2 miles from the Washington Place site, a 3-minute walk using Walnut Street. We have timed it. The VHD report mentions that the possibility of Austin Street and several other projects might adversely affect traffic, but VHD concludes, page 15, that the impact will be negligible. Their site-related trips are not expected to affect our study area. I want to be clear on this one. That statement is false. If you go to page 19 of our traffic study, or 15, excuse me, states very clearly that the traffic associated with Austin Street is included as a background project in this study. So it's just a misrepresentation. I'm not sure what the confusion is, but there is also a layer in the appendix that demonstrates that further. Item number 3, the VHD report says, page 9, that it should understand that the proposed redevelopment is a transit-oriented development. Similarly, the report says, page 1, VHD has completed a detailed traffic assessment to evaluate the potential impact associated with mixed-use development transit-oriented known as Washington Place. So, the proposed project has strong access, local and regional transit opportunities. We have the train across the street, we have bus on Walnut Street and Washington Street directly in front of the site. So there's no question that there is good opportunity to access transit. The transit may not be as robust as it is in other parts of the city or other parts of the state, but it is available. And to get a sense on the usage of it in this particular area, all you have to do is look at the census tract information, Journey to Work, which is readily available. And if you look at the residential area surrounding this site, it shows very clearly that 18% of the people who hold full-time jobs utilize transit to get to and from work. That's real data. That's not made up. That's data that's readily available to anybody. So 18% of the people who live in this immediate area already use the transit that's available. That data alone would allow us to take an 18% credit. Oh, thank you. would allow us to take an 18% credit against the traffic generation associated with the site. We chose not to do that. We took no transit credit as part of any of the operational analyses. We did so because we wanted to provide the city with a conservative assessment of future conditions. The next one. DHT proposes curb extensions, bump outs, to make the intersection safer. What the report failed to mention is that the bump outs also slow traffic, so the level of service estimates will be worse, not better. We are not saying that the bump outs are a bad idea, but if bump outs and other such changes are good ideas, they should be built into the base case. No build. Newton should consider doing them regardless of whether and when the project is built. Again, this one, I think if you really look at the plan and take a very close look at it, which may be hard to do at the scale we provided, so I'll acknowledge that. The bump outs, as proposed, do not influence the lane width on Washington Street or Walnut Street. The widths that are there today are being provided in the future. The bump outs are taking place of pavement, which is really underutilized. The pavement is in an area that isn't on street parking. It's just there. It's not part of a lane. So the lane widths are what drive the movement of flow, and they're not being changed. The bump outs will provide a buffer for on-street parking, which is obviously a good thing, but maybe more importantly, it'll provide shorter crossing distances for pedestrians at this location, which I think is really what the benefit of this particular improvement is. So we'll not have an operational degradation. It will just take up the space in a different way than it does today. I'm going to wrap it up. I guess one more, two more, very quick. This one says, note the entries that say, and in quotes, large, no usable data. Those words mean that the model results are over 120 seconds in all cases, so the change cannot be calculated. The suggestion of that comment is that there's somewhere in our report that we have a statement saying large, no usable data. And that perplexed us because I've never used that phrase in my life, and no one I work with did. So we couldn't find where it was, and turns out it's not in the report, even though it's quoted as if it is. What we did find was that in a very early comment critique of the traffic work by Mr. Muir, there was a statement in there that referenced that. So I think there's some confusion about where the origin of where that came from. Even with the confusion, I think we understand the comment, and just to clarify what it is, the concern is that in our traffic study, in the proposed, or excuse me, the signalized operational analysis table, when we see delay at an intersection, the level service track, which is where you'll have a delay of greater than 100 seconds or 120 seconds, we don't show it as greater than 120 seconds, okay? We stop it there. We just say greater than 120. And to a lot of people, that could be extremely confusing, especially if you're not in this industry doing this every day. Why we do that is a couple of reasons. One is that the Highway Capacity Manual, which all this software is based on, it's the Bible of traffic engineering for traffic impact work, it states very clearly that when you get delay that approaches 100 seconds or 120, the analysis, the operational analysis start to fail, and the results are not as reliable as they are from 0 to 100. And as a result, there's no use presenting data that we don't have any, you know, reliance on. So it's a standard practice by us and all the other consultants in this area to limit the delay at 120 seconds. There was a further confusion about that 120 seconds when it relates to the proposed condition. There was even a suggestion in the comment letter that said, under the proposed condition, we're still going to have 120 seconds of delay. That's not correct. If you look at the results of the operational analysis with the proposed project in place and the improvements associated with it, the delay goes down to, in the order of magnitude, 30 seconds, which results in a level of service C, so a substantial enhancement in level of service as a result of the proposed project. And just one more, and this one's really quick. So this comment says that DHT told Ron Mori that the reduced 2023 build and maybe no build 2 traffic was reduced by a percentage because MAPC or other organizations said we could do so. Again, that's not accurate. Mr. Mori was kind enough to review our work. He provided a letter regarding it to the city. We were given a copy of it. We then asked for a meeting with Mr. Mori, and he kindly obliged, came to our office. We requested that the peer consultant from the city attend. They were not able to attend, but they attended by phone for the full hour and a half that we met. And the question that came up was related to why there was a differential in delay between existing and a no-build condition. In fact, there were one or two instances in the analysis where the delay was actually improved between those conditions, and logically you wouldn't think that would happen, and I agree. But there's a standard, a requirement actually, by MassDOT that says when you go from existing conditions to a proposed condition, a future condition, 7 years out in the future, they require us to reset the default on a peak hour factor. And I'm not going to bore you with the technical definition of that. But what it does mean is that we change the peak hour factor, which does change potentially the operational for certain movements. Okay. But the thing that's important here is that when we look at the impact of the project, we compare the no-build to the build. And even with the reset peak hour factor, the peak hour factor from the no-build is identical to the peak hour of the build. And so the impact of the project is correctly identified, correctly realized. Peer consultant fully agreed with that commentary, and I think there was just some confusion about the detail of that in this comment letter. So that's a sample, I think, of the responses that we have. There are many more comments, but I'll stop there tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Just a single question for you. Is this considered a transit-oriented development?
It's certainly a development that has access to transit, yes.
That wasn't my question. Is this a transit-oriented development under the standard definitions of it, yes or no?
I'm not the right person to ask that question.
Okay.
It's not a traffic term.
All right. Just want to be clear, because we're talking about a term of art, and sure. I think we ought to make sure we get a clear answer on that. So
yes.
Perhaps, Attorney Bookbinder, when you have an opportunity, if we can just get an answer for that, as to what your position is and what this development does, that'd be helpful. We've been joined by two of my colleagues, Councillor Lyle Baker, Ward Counselor from Ward 7, President Emeritus of the Board, the Council, not a member of the committee, and next to him is Councillor Greg Schwartz, Vice Chair of the Committee, Councillor at Large from Ward 6. Any questions for Mr. Hart, briefly, just clarification questions before we go on to the rest of the presentation? Go ahead, please, Councillor Baker.
Just the last comment, second to last comment. I thought I understood him to say that there was a situation in which the build condition produced an improvement, not just a maintenance of the current situation. Did I hear that correctly?
I don't know. Mr. Hart, you want to respond to that, please?
Yes, absolutely. The build condition with the improvements associated with them does result in a substantially improved operation at Walnut and Washington Street.
It's the street improvements that cause the improvement. It's not the additional structure that causes the improvement.
Yeah, I just want to get clear on what's up.
If we did the improvements without any building at all, but we did the improvements in the city paid for it, we'd clearly have improvements at the intersection.
Okay.
Is that accurate, Mr. Hart?
No question.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying.
Councilor Schwartz?
I'm sorry, I might have missed something, but I thought I heard you say that the reason why data was only collected in one day is that that's all that's required by DOT and some of these other regulations. Do you ever find, I'm just curious, in other projects or just even conceptually, that you prefer to have more data than that just in case the one day was not representative? And is there any obstacle to doing that other than potentially cost?
Yeah, certainly no obstacle, time and money, obviously. But, you know, typically we don't need more than one day. I would say there's exceptions to that rule, and some of the exceptions are in areas where they're highly seasonable. Cape Cod, for instance, you know, we like to count in the summer on Cape Cod. You can't always do that. And if you can't do that, you're required to use adjustment factors. Adjustment factors are not favorable. They're unfavorable to the project. So sometimes we have to do multiple counts and turns like that. One thing I'll add to what I said before is that while we counted in November, we compared to the CTPS count data at the same location, which was April. It was very comparable. But one thing I didn't tell you, what we always do, is we look at the count data and then we look at yearly traffic data in the area and try and determine what November is. Is it normal? Is it average? Above average? Below? Whatever. In this particular instance, it showed to be over 2% higher than normal conditions. So typically, we would adjust downward to get to normal. We chose not to do that. Again, wanted to be conservative. So there's layer after layer of conservatism built into the analysis that we've provided.
Can I follow up on a question? You said you consult data about traffic in the area. Traffic in Newton, traffic in Greater Boston, what are you referring to?
Yeah, we look at permanent count stations, which are there all the time, collecting data on a daily basis. And, you know, there aren't a tremendous amount of them around, but there happens to be one on the Mass Pike directly below the bridge, the Walnut Street Bridge. And it's not Newton, it's Mass Pike, I know. But that was looked at, as well as a couple of others in the area. And
with all respect, I take the pipe every day, and the traffic situation varies enormously at the same time, depending on an array of factors. So,
fair enough.
I put that out there. Your analysis did not include anything in the city of Newton other than in the pike, right? When you looked at this other data?
I'd have to go back.
Okay, thank you. Councilor Albright?
Thank you. I just want to make sure that I understand something, because we had a discussion, a question before, about if you just change the signalization, would you get the same benefit at the intersection of Washington and Walnut Street? And having had the benefit of just seeing your simulation a minute ago, half an hour ago, I mean, they're moving the buildings back onto the property and giving the city essentially a lane, an extra lane. So they're creating two lanes of traffic on Walnut Street heading south that weren't there before, and that's a benefit that we don't get just by changing signals. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. You might be able to install a lane southbound in the right-of-way that exists today, but you wouldn't be able to do that in the context of 6-foot bike lanes on both sides and additional sidewalk. So, yeah, by taking some property essentially from the site, you are able to get all of that in there, and it's making a difference.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anybody else? Questions for Mr. Hart? And let's just try to focus on fast ones. Okay. Thank you very much. Attorney Buchmeier, who's next up, please?
Good evening. My name is Lauren Bellman, and I'm the Vice President of New Ecology. New Ecology is a local nonprofit organization with the mission to promote community-based sustainable development, and we've been brought onto this project to work with the design and development team to maximize the opportunities here for energy efficiency and sustainability. So I wanted to take a little time tonight to just talk you through the approach that we take on projects. I'm going to try and get to some of the slides related to this. So we are an organization that works with development teams and projects from early sort of conceptual approach all the way through occupancy. And we don't start with checklists. We start with real performance-based strategies. And so one of the things that I wanted to reference is special permit criteria number 5 as being a driving force behind how we approach sustainability on this project, and really being part of the process that we use with project teams. And so there are 3 components I wanted to talk about tonight. The first is sustainable design. So this is the first step to integrating sustainable development into the project. And there's obviously a lot of work that's been done to date in terms of a sustainable design for this project, but we're going to be working with the team as we work through some of the details associated with site design and making sure that we're getting the making the most of the transit-oriented and pedestrian-friendly and amenity-accessible site. Building construction is a big piece, and so we're going to be working with the architects and engineers to design the high-performance building enclosure that's going to have continuous and thermal insulation, really high thermal values, really low air infiltration, to try and create a very low energy load and very comfortable building. Mechanical systems are another area of focus, and so high efficiency, individually metered, right-sized mechanical systems, thinking about the building not only now but also into the future, and thinking about the accessibility of roof space for solar, and so we'll be mapping the roof and looking at opportunities given competing interests around the roof space. And health is something that we also spend a lot of time and energy on. So thinking about health from the perspective of material selection, ventilation and mechanical systems, but on also filtration. So those are all areas that we're going to be spending a lot of time working with the design team on, and making sure that we're maximizing opportunities around sustainable development and efficient design. The next phase is construction, and it's extremely important that there is a transitional process between the design phase and the construction phase to ensure that we're actually applying sustainable design concepts into the building of the building. And so we'll be setting performance standards for air infiltration to make sure that the building is air sealed well, that ducts are air sealed well. We'll be working with contractors to train and educate them on the best methodologies for actually achieving the design goals and details in the field. So we do that in a very practical, hands-on way through trades trainings and by working with teams during construction to make sure that they understand how to achieve the best performance in the unit. And then we're going to actually be doing verification during construction as well. So doing inspections around insulation, air barriers, durability components, water protection, all the things that make buildings high-performance, durable buildings. And so we'll be the third-party inspection group that's going to be checking on those things through construction. The last, but obviously not the least important piece of this is sustainable operations. So again, the goal of all of this work is to make sure at the end of the day that we have a very healthy and sustainable building. And so we are going to be working with the developer and their team to make sure that we're translating these sustainable goals and design approaches into the operations phase and that the staff that's going to be operating and maintaining the building is well-versed in how to do that efficiently and effectively. So we're going to be developing operations and maintenance guides and doing trainings with the building staff so that they understand all of the components of the building and how to maintain performance over time. And we're also going to be developing a resident green guide. So residents are a really important and integral part of the sustainability equation for buildings. So making sure that we're educating them about the nature of the building, the nature of the features in their units, and how to use those most efficiently is a really important piece to the overall sustainability of the building as well. So that's just a general sort of big picture overview of how we approach and think about and work with design development teams around these sustainability issues. And we're really looking forward to doing that on this project, working with the team all the way through operations.
Great. Thank you very much. Don't go anywhere just in case there's any questions. Colleagues, do you have any questions for any questions on this? I'm sorry. Councilor Norton?
Thank you so much. That was really helpful. I'm really interested in the education aspect for residents because I've heard a little bit about this, that you can design a building a certain way, whether it's the the professional staff or the residents. And if things aren't used correctly, then you don't get the most benefit. Can you give an example maybe of another project where you've, what that would entail?
Yeah, absolutely. So we routinely on projects put together what we're calling Green Living Guides. And so that outlines all of the big picture sustainability features that have been integrated into the project, but then it also helps residents understand how to have behaviors and adapt their lifestyle around greener living. And so it can range from talking about, the types of lighting in the building, the low flow fixtures and the water conservation, the energy efficiency piece of things. But it'll also help them understand things that are more of a day-to-day basis. So, for example, on this project, we're looking at using individually metered mechanical systems, and that's very intentional. It's very intentional from the perspective of this team is going to be designing a really high-efficiency building envelope and putting really high-efficiency mechanical systems in, but the way that you really promote sustainability is by having residents have some skin in the game in terms of utility consumption. And so helping residents understand that there are components of the building that the design and development team has put in to make it a very sustainable and healthy building, but that they are an important piece of this equation. And so they need to be thinking about their energy use, their water use, and how they do that most efficiently.
Anybody else? Councilor Albright.
So we've had several constituents who have specifically said, what about solar panels? Mm-hmm. And so, you have a whole big plan, but you didn't specifically say yes or no to that. I think it's worth commenting on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about renewable energy, we really think about it as the icing on the cake for energy efficiency for projects. So energy load reduction really needs to be the primary focus, and that's the thing that we're going to spend a lot of time and energy on, is making sure that we're designing the most efficient, durable building we possibly can and driving energy loads down. Once you've driven those energy loads down, then you can start to explore things like renewable energy. And so for this project, there's obviously a lot of competing interest for the roof area. We've got some wonderful outdoor spaces for the tenants that are going to be part of the roof planning process. We have mechanical equipment that we do need to find space for as well. So one of the things that we're going to be engaging in very soon is a roof mapping process where we're going to take a look at the roof areas and identify the areas that are needed for outdoor space for mechanical systems, and then try to maximize and optimize the amount of space that we could leave for renewable energy integration. And so once we've done that mapping exercise, we'll identify how much space we have available. We'll be able to get a much better idea of the feasibility of renewable energy. But at a baseline, what we're going to be doing is building this building to be solar ready. And that's the concept, that we want to leave as much space open and area that has prime solar access open and without any penetrations or mechanical shading as we possibly can. We want to create the structural capacity to be able to handle a renewable energy system. We want to create the infrastructure in terms of cases and wiring and space to be able to handle all of the affiliated equipment. So that's something that we're definitely taking seriously, and we're engaging in this process to really see what's possible on the project. And one other thing I just wanted to bring up, you know, I've focused on a lot of the very sort of practical components of sustainability, but all of these things are going to culminate also in a LEED certification. So the project team is planning on achieving a LEED certification on this building at the gold level.
So this looks like an excellent plan for the launch of the building. Over time, there's turnover in residents, turnover in operations staff, and so forth. Is there going to be some kind of ongoing plan to re-educate or educate and re-educate the new tenants that arrive?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we do routinely in the building operator training session is we're training the lease-up staff so that they understand the green components of the building. And one of the things that they'll do is as tenants come in and tour the building, they'll talk about those green components. As tenants move in, they'll talk about the details related to their units and behavioral components. But there'll be a process by which, when units turn over, that same training is done with the new residents who come in. So it will be an ongoing training process. The same would be true for staff, operations staff. That's something that we also have to think forward about. You know, you're not going to have the same person operating your building in 3 years as potentially you do today. And so that's why we think it's really important to do these operations and maintenance guides with really sort of straightforward, simple ways of understanding what needs to be done at the building to maintain efficiency over time.
So two questions for you. One, actually it's not a question, but really for Attorney Bookbinder. At a later date, I'd like to see more detail about what you're proposing for the roof area. We haven't talked about that yet, and I'm hearing a variety of things potentially going on there. I think we need to do that, including if there's going to be occupancy on the roof area. As I'm now hearing, we need to think about noise issues and what that would be effect on the neighbors. And we haven't had any discussion about that, is my recollection. The second is for our planning department. We're hearing some wonderful statements here about sustainability and all the things that the developer is saying they're going to do. This consultant may not be there in 2 years. I certainly hope you are, but you may not be. And I want to know what's going to go into a board order and what would be appropriate in a board order to ensure that the representations and promises that are getting made by the developer are going to be effectuated and carried out not only immediately but down the road. And I think that was a comment there. So again, nothing to think about to do this evening, but to contemplate that as we go forward. And Attorney Bookbinder, you might want to think through a little bit too as to what conditions would be appropriate for whatever order is crafted and whatever project is approved to make sure that these things are carried forward. Any other questions by anybody? Councilor Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a quick question. I didn't catch the name of your company.
It's New Ecology.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All set? Okay. Councilor Crosby.
Thank you. So, of course, I am delighted to hear this articulation in more detail of what the measures are that are planned to be incorporated into this project and into this building. I think along the lines of what Chairman Laredo was just saying, as a first step, it would be helpful to have a written piece that bullets or is a narrative of the elements that you're talking about tonight, and perhaps in a little more specificity so that we can understand the integration of all things. And I think that might, I'm guessing, be helpful to the planning department as well, to so that we can agree on what goes into this council order.
Great. We'll do that.
We've been joined by Council Auchincloss. Good evening. I know you are delayed from work. Anybody else wish to questions for this part of the project? Thank you very much. Attorney Bookbinder?
Mr. Chairman, let me briefly address the question about transit-oriented development. To my knowledge, there's no universal term, transit-oriented development. It shows up in different places in different contexts. In our own zoning ordinances, the mixed-use 3 specifically is entitled the mixed-use 3/transit-oriented development. And it goes on to speak about the development of the mixed-use center on a parcel of not less than 9 acres near the terminus of the mass transit rail line, an interstate highway, a scenic road, and the Charles River. In the mixed-use 4, there is no use of the term transit-oriented. There are two references to transit. In section 4.2.1c3, we talk about allow sufficient density and intensity of uses to promote a lively pedestrian environment, public transit, and so forth. And in subsection 5, it talks about promoting the health and well-being of residents by encouraging physical activity and use of alternative modes of transportation.
Maybe our planning department for our next time can try to provide us perhaps with some more definition of what would be considered transit-oriented development and why this project meets it or doesn't meet it. Go ahead, please.
And I would just like to say for the record that our belief is it doesn't need to meet any definition of transit-oriented development.
So I understand that, but the term's been used an awful lot in our dialogue about this, and I think it would be helpful to provide some context and definition as to what we mean by transit-oriented development. How much public transit is there in transit-oriented development? And that may vary, I presume, from location to location.
No, that makes sense. Thank you. I want to talk just a bit about why a change of zone is appropriate. I've been asked this question by several individuals during the course of the proceeding, and I think it's more than a fair question. Just by way of some historical background, originally the lots comprising the site had been zoned, dating back to the 1920s, for a combination of business and manufacturing uses, business uses in the front, manufacturing districts, uses to the rear. From about 1951 on, the lots were all zoned for business use, first as a business A and B, and later that got changed to a business 1 and 2. As a practical matter, I think that any significant redevelopment of the site would require a rezone to an all-business 2 use. Right now, as you're probably aware, there is a split zone, some business 1 and some business 2. So I'm going to make a few remarks assuming that we were looking at a business 2. As late as 1976, the zoning ordinances would have allowed a 6-story, 60-foot-high building as of right at this site, and through at least 1984, a 10-story, 100-foot-high building could have been authorized by special permit. Since 1987, when we had a revision in the ordinance, 4 stories and up to 48 feet have been allowed by special permit in the Business 2 zoning district. In 2012, the then Board of Aldermen, on which many of you served, approved the new mixed-use 4 zone. The vote was 23 in favor with one absence. In enacting the mixed-use 4 zone for development in village centers, the Board clearly had determined that the existing Business 1 and Business 2 zones, which are the predominant zones in our village centers, clearly were not adequate for development going forward. Hence, there was no reason for creating a mixed-use 4. It was intended to provide greater density and greater flexibility than the business zones permitted. Specifically, the mixed-use 4 zone authorizes up to 5 stories and up to 60 feet, as opposed to the 4 stories and 48 feet, which are permitted by special permit in the business 2 zone. Of equal or perhaps even greater importance, though, the mixed-use 4 zone provides flexibility in the lot area per unit requirement. The business 2 zone requires 1,200 square feet per unit. The mixed-use floor zone starts with a threshold of 1,000 square feet per unit, but goes on to permit the council to reduce that amount to any reduction in the council's discretion as part of the mixed-use floor special permit. As time has evolved, there's been a trend towards a more diverse mix of housing opportunities. With an increase in studio units and of late the introduction of so-called micro units. The 1,200 square foot per unit requirement promotes fewer, but in reality, much larger units. Daniel is going to get into this in a moment in his presentation, but for example, by special permit in the business 2 zone, one could achieve 103 three-bedroom units. By contrast, current housing developments provide smaller units with more expansive common areas. And that's what we're seeing, not only locally here in Newton, but in the greater Boston area and beyond. More units that are reduced size also results in a greater number of affordable units. So perhaps even more than the height and the number of stories, it is the lot area per unit requirement which is problematic for modern housing developments in the city. I also want to make clear that the lot area per unit in a business 2 cannot be waived and reduced by special permit. That would require a variance. As all of you know, it is extremely difficult to obtain a variance, and in my opinion, no variance could ever be obtained for that purpose because you would lack a hardship. Aside from the requirements of the number of stories and height and lot area per unit, there are additional reasons why the mixed-use floor zone is more appropriate for this site. It was created specifically for the city's village commercial centers, and I would submit to you that the intersection of Washington Street and Walnut Street clearly meets that requirement. It encourages a pedestrian-oriented development with a mixture of active uses. It provides beneficial open space, which creates a public benefit, and it expands the diversity of housing options. Former Alderman Martha Johnson, who chaired the Zoning and Planning Committee at the time, has made it clear that the mixed-use floor zone was not created solely for Austin Street, but it was intended to apply to village centers across the city. At the first public hearing on this matter, I stood here and I made the observation, if not here, then where? And I would submit to you that that's still true today. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Damian.
Just a question for Ms. Young. The 1,200 square foot minimum that Attorney Bookbinder just referred to, is that a minimum per unit or is that an averaging of the units that are being built?
I really wanted to correct on that answer, and I'm not prepared for it tonight, okay. So I will come up
with it. I think it would be, if
now it's under the 1,200 square feet takes the total lot area of the site, and when you divide it by the 1,200 square feet, that tells you the maximum number of units you can have. So it's the ratio of units allowed based on the land area.
So it's not the size of the units.
Not the size.
So in other
the
words,
land area per unit.
So let's just be very clear. I want to understand this. The developer could choose to build fewer units that were smaller.
He could. He could. Yeah, he could. It would be uneconomical, but he could. Yeah.
Well, we're not supposed to consider economics is what I'm told by our planning department. So, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Sure, the developer can do whatever, you know.
Right, but I want to be very clear on something here, and I think it's important to get the factual information out properly. I understand why you're looking for a different zone, but when you say 1,200 square feet, that presumes a certain number of units that you want to build. If you built fewer units, it could be of a much smaller size. Is that right? Larger or smaller? Smaller units. I guess I want to be clear, Attorney Bookbinder, so if I'm missing something, explain it to me.
We know that, but the question
is... I think what you're getting at is the lot area per unit affects the density of the project.
Okay.
So
it regulates the number of units and density of a project, and the applicant is seeking a waiver, which in the NU4 is the only zoning district in Newton where you are allowed to ask for a waiver of the lot.
Otherwise, they can't get a waiver which places certain limitations on what they can do in a B2 zone.
Correct.
Okay. I think it's an important point, and frankly, at least for me, we've had discussions, I've asked the planning department about this. Ms. Anand has been gracious enough to explain it to me. I'm probably a little dense about it. Maybe my colleagues are all more facile than I, but I think it would be very helpful if the planning and legal departments together could present information to us as to the differences between the two zones, and what could be built and what can't be built, and what effect that would have on the developer, because the developer is coming to us with a specific request for a zone change and explaining why, in their view, that is important for the type of project they're trying to build. And I think we need to understand what their position is and what could be built there otherwise, and I think some clarification, at least for me, would be helpful. And I think it's very important for the public to understand that, too. So, Councillor Albright.
Well, the other thing that should go into that is that there was a rationale that the board then, now the council, had for allowing more density in the village center. So it's not just what can you do in N4 that you can't do in B1 or 2, but what are we trying to achieve here? And that should be factored into whatever they write.
I'm fine with that being factored in. I just want to make sure that we all understand what's being asked for in a zone change, how that affects this project, what they could do if they don't get the zone change, and what they can't do if they don't get the zone change, because I think that's important for the analysis. Councillor Schwartz?
Not to belabor the point, but the way I would think of it and what I would be interested in seeing is that if you take the various zones and you multiply out or divide out by 1,200 or whatever, how many units would it be allowed maximum in one and how many units would be allowed in the other? And then, of course, there are other factors. As was alluded to, if the developer wanted to have smaller units, more studios, they'd still be limited to that total number in the business too, but they might have to give up, because that's maybe economically not as favorable, they might have to give up some of the benefits that they're also providing in other ways. So that would be helpful to the discussion, just to kind of understand the underlying economics as well, at least for me, because it's one of the factors that we would want to consider if we're thinking about the overall benefit or mitigation of the negative effects of the project.
I also want to understand for B2, which is, I understand the why B1 and B2 are different, but you can explain that to us. I'd also want to understand if the number of residential units was, by definition, fewer because of the limitations, could they still build additional commercial or office space in lieu of those residential units? I'd like to see how that plays out as well, if you could explain that to us.
Sure.
Okay. I'm sorry, but and I appreciate you bringing it up because we had talked about it, and I don't think we as a committee have really adequately focused on the differences. I haven't, and it's very helpful to understand them.
Now, I appreciate the opportunity, and as I turn this over to Danny, and he's going to touch on some of this as part of his presentation, I agree it's a very important point.
Good evening.
Hi, good evening. Damian Chaviano with Mark Development, and I think we've started to address some of the questions that just came up. What we tried to do is put together a matrix that sort of outlines the parameters of the BU2 component that Steve spoke of, and then put it in the context of our special permit filing, the submittal we put together back in June, and then walk you through the two proposals that we're going to present to you today. So, again, using the special permit under the BU2, we would be able to achieve a TSAR, which based on our site size of just over 123,000 square feet, if we were to maximize that SAR, we would be entitled to 247,000 square feet of GFA. So again, under the lot area per unit, using the 1,200 square feet, which is the requirement under the BU2, we'd be capped at a total unit count of 103. So assuming that we built those 103 units, effectively using that GFA, we'd average out at 2,000 square feet per unit. Now, for us, having studied the marketplace, we don't think that 2,000 square foot units what's appropriate for Newton for a number of reasons. One, we think diversity of housing is key for any mixed-use project. And two, we think larger housing options are moving in a different direction, as Steve talked about earlier. People are looking for smaller, more affordable, willing to give up square footage to pay less in rent. And so therefore, we have had a challenge with the notion of the 1,200 square foot lot area per unit, which is one of the key reasons why we went with the MU4. Okay? In addition, the other component, as many of you know, is that there's a height limitation under the BU2 of 4 stories. So as you can see under our filing, which is the middle column, although we were under the FAR, we were approximately 10,000 square feet below our maximum allowable GFA, what we asked for was a reduction in lot area per unit in order to accommodate smaller units, or 171 total units, with a lot average of 725 per unit on a square foot basis. In addition, we asked for a 5-story building. So, again, to highlight, there's two components that pushed us to the MU4. Again, it was the lot, It was the lot area per unit, as you can see at the 725, and the increase in height over the 4 stories allowed under the BU2 special permit. What I'm here to present you with is two scenarios, both of which reduce the GFA by 10,000 square feet. They take out 10 units under both programs, reducing the 171 to 161. And I'm going to give you two scenarios, one of which keeps what we call the 4- and 5-story scheme, 5 stories at certain locations where we believe it's appropriate. And the second scheme I'm going to show you today is an entire project at 4 stories. Either of which we're willing to do today as presented. I'm going to conclude with which one we prefer, but as I said, we'd be happy to do either scenario if the community felt that was appropriate. So to give you a sense of what these scenarios entail, this is what I'm calling option A. And for hopefully those in the public, you can see this. The gray buildings represent the existing conditions. So as you can see right now, moving right to left, this is Walnut Street, this is Washington Street. The rear of the building currently at this location is a 24-foot building that's 17 feet from the property line. There's a 33-foot building in height that currently sits 7 feet from the property line. And as many of you know, Boston Ballet fills up a majority of the parking lot area or the rear of the project or our property. What we tried to do is illustrate under option A in these red lines, this is what we're calling scenario A under our revised proposal. Okay, and what we tried to do is keep the density or the massing up on Washington Street, which has been our reason for asking for the 5th story. The scenario that I'm about to show you drops to 4 stories across the whole building, but in order to accommodate the shift in massing, what we've asked for are 2 bump outs. Again, keeping a 45-foot setback, as you see here under both scenarios, but a 76-foot bump out encroaching over the parking area, and a 34-foot bump out also encroaching on the parking area. And I'll explain what that means and how it impacts the parking in a second. So again, this is now just showing our building under what I'm calling option A. This is the area here that I'm going to refer to in 1 minute where the additional bump out's located, and this is where the second bump out's located. Again, the idea is to keep the same 45-foot setback under either scenario. There we go. So this is a representation of what the 76-foot bump out would look like and the 34-foot bump out would look like. Now, to articulate this further, you'll see it in renderings, but what's happening here is these two buildings are being built on stilts. So there'd still be parking access underneath both of those locations. In fact, anywhere in this gray area is a pass-through. But these additional bump-outs would cause a reduction in parking spaces of 2. So we'd go down from 103 parking spaces under option A down to 101. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to walk you through 7 different vantage points, and I'm going to go from A to B so that you can understand the change in massing from the exact same vantage point under either scenario. As you can tell, this is the view looking north from the Walnut Street Bridge. This is the 5-story building with the 5 being on Washington and Walnut, and the fifth on the middle building. As you'll notice, under all of these scenarios, we've taken the fifth floor off of the west building. Here's option B with a reduction to fourth. Moving down Washington Street, this is the west building. As I said, under both scenarios, this is, this is the building that was redesigned for those of you who missed the last hearing. What we showed at the last hearing also was a step back with a fifth floor. We've removed that. What I'm about to show you, if you focus on this point, this is the middle building here. This is a fifth floor step back. You'll see when I click that that would entail removing that fifth floor step back. Moving further down Washington Street, this is looking east. Again, this is at four stories. What I'd have you focus on is the Washington Street east building, I'll call it. And you can see the change there that we drop on the corner and the middle building down to four stories. Moving around the building. This is the revised parking scheme. So this is option A. Again, this is keeping 103 parking spaces, so no impact, a relatively minor impact to the parking. We originally filed at 110, which would be 103. Again, keeping four stories on the west building. The 76-foot bump out is what you see here. Again, you can see the articulation of the stilts and how the parking would be impacted. What we designed here is a four-story building dropping to three. You're about to see another angle. This is looking from Walnut Street, so this is the second bump out of 34 feet, and you'll see that from another angle in the next slide. So again, this is option A, now looking from the Washington Terrace vantage point. This is the plaza, the center plaza here, with the fifth story still along Washington Street. This is the change if you were to drop it to four stories across the entire project and add the 34-foot bump out at this location. Moving along, this is Walnut Street, looking south. When you change, you lose the fifth floor at the corner of Washington and Walnut. This is the change from a closer view. This is the fifth floor, step back about 10 feet, and dropping to four stories. That's what it would look like when you remove the entire section, starting at Washington and moving partially down Walnut Street. We've also been asked to show some representative images of the existing condition of our Foster Street neighbors, both as they sit today and under both proposals, as well as the landscape mitigation package. I'm going to move sequentially down the street to give you a sense of what we think the views would look like, starting at 1416 Foster Street. This is your existing condition. As you can see here, this is option A. Again, this is the fifth four-story, I'll call it, combo. As you can see here, we've programmed planting 20-foot evergreen trees. The second scenario, this is option B, dropping the four stories along Washington Street with the 34-foot bump out at the rear. And this gives you a sense of option A in 3 years, assuming what we've been told is 2 foot per year growth on those evergreen trees. So that's what it would look like on option A on a three years later. And this is what it would look like under option B 3 years later. Moving down the street to 20 Foster Street, this is the existing condition. Under option A, this would be the change. Under option B, and again, 3 years later under option A, and 3 years later under option B. Continuing down, this is 2426 Foster Street. Again, existing condition, option A, option B, and 3 years down the road under option A, 3 years down the road under option B. 30 Foster Street, again, the existing condition. You can see here the building. Under option A, this would be the new building. Under option B, and then again 3 years later, what it would look like under option A, and what it would look like under option B. 34 Foster Street, again, existing condition, option A, option B. 3 years later for option A, 3 years later for option B. This is 40 Foster Street. This building here, this is along Washington Terrace. This building is not part of the project, so this building would not be torn down as part of this project, but we propose putting up landscape mitigation as well, and that's what it would look like when it's all said and done. And then here it is 3 years later. So to give you a sense of what we prefer, we think strongly that the 4-5 scheme is the right direction for this project to go in. Again, we're willing to do either scenario, but we truly think that the massing is more appropriate on Washington Street than it is at the rear of the property. So when you look at the setbacks and you look at the massing, we think that this project leads you to option A. When you look at density under either scenario, as I said, we've assumed the same amount of units and the same amount of square footage, so there's no change there. From a retail, shopper, or parking experience, we think option B is a bit compromised. When you add the silt concept into the parking facility, we think that creates a little bit of a parking circulation challenge. So we think that really the commercial experience is favored under option A. And from our perspective, I know this is a controversial topic, the height of the building we think is very subjective. You know, we believe, taking our cues from land planning that, five stories along Washington Street is appropriate. A rule of thumb that we commonly look at is a 1-for-1 street to building height ratio. As many of you know, Washington Street is extremely wide, north of 80 feet, so that means our 60-foot proposal is significantly less than that. And we personally believe the height is appropriate there, which would lead us to option A if we were asked to pick which one we would go with. And that's it.
All right. Could you, none of your pictures show anything on the roofs of either option. What are your visions for the roofs?
Well, what we showed in the last hearing, we actually showed the roof deck spaces as it relates. We showed, we articulated where those roofs would be. Quite frankly, we have not spent the time, we haven't focused on the roof component, waiting for feedback on where the design should go. But again, we'd be envisioning similar green roof and roof deck components as we showed at the last.
I don't know how others in the committee feel, but I think it'd be helpful to at least get some visuals. Doesn't have to be detailed schematics, but some visuals as to what the roofs would look like, including what portions you're envisioning are going to be occupied by people from time to time.
Yeah, we're happy to do that. I think it was a good, part of what someone asked earlier as it relates to the environmental component. I think we can tie the two together and give you feedback on both of those.
And you commented before about the five stories being appropriate for Washington Street, but part of the five stories are on Walnut Street. And how do you square that?
Yeah, same rule of thumb. So Walnut Street is north of 60 feet in width. We also think using that same guideline that the 60 feet there is appropriate as well.
Okay. Questions? I know that, just hold on a second. There's a lot here. I don't want us to start our evening with a debate on whether we prefer 4 or 5. I want to make sure we let members of the public get heard first. I know that, but I do want to have some opportunity for us to provide some commentary because I know the developer's looking for that. Councilor Albright?
I just wanted to point out, I don't think my colleagues have had a conversation, we haven't had a conversation with Foster Street about this yet, have you? No. So I didn't. The three of us have not met with the Foster Street neighbors to understand the impact on them, and I think they play an important role in this. And because the building is considerably closer to them, although it seems like you can't see it at all, the building is considerably closer, and I think we need to really find out their perspective on this.
Certainly, that's one of a number of perspectives that we need to consider. But if the Ward 2 councilors want to facilitate some of that discussion, I think that's always extremely helpful. Councilor Fuller, then Crosley, then Auchincloss.
Just want the developer to clarify something that Councilor Albright said. Said the building is considerably closer. I thought the building was not closer, that there's just more of it.
Yeah, that's correct. So the building is actually set back further than any of the existing buildings that are there today. But you're right, the massing along Foster Street moving horizontally, there's more buildings there. So yes, you're correct from a setback standpoint.
Okay. Thank you. Councilor Clausley?
Thanks. So I guess I have a process question in the context of what we're looking at. Our next meeting is November 29th.
That's correct.
This evening, I would imagine the developer would like some as clear direction as possible of the direction we'd like them to go in, so they're not simultaneously developing two buildings at a greater level of detail, my thinking. So I guess I'm putting that on the table and asking, you know, what's our process between now and the end of the year, if I think we were hoping to vote this.
We're not, frankly, I don't think we're going to vote on this by the end of the year, to be blunt. I think it's going to be difficult for us to do. I may be wrong. If my colleagues disagree with me, fine, but at least my view, Councilor Clausley, and a great question. This is the first time I think most folks have seen this. I did get a preview from Ms. Anand. I, for one, while I have some thoughts in it, need to get some, I want to think about it a lot more rather than just give you an off-the-cuff response. And certainly members of the public, this is your first vision of these choices, and I think that they need an opportunity to weigh in this evening if they can, but also weigh in on the 29th.
Okay, so is the 29th our next and last meeting of this calendar year?
Well, we have...
That's really my question.
We have numerous other meetings between now and the end of the year, but they're devoted to other... It may be. We haven't decided whether we're going to try to get another one in December. I know we had talked about that. I need to check availability of people's calendars. I'm loath to have us come out four nights in a particular week. But the president's here, and he's the one who's in charge of that. So, President Lennon?
So, to maybe add a little clarity, I had sent the chairman an email earlier today, hoping to grab a couple minutes tonight to talk schedule. And I thought what was helpful, what we did with Austin Street, that I'd like to do with this, I think the chair and the vice chair had worked in consultation with the planning department and, you know, in this case, the petitioner. I thought we had laid out a schedule on Austin Street when we were talking about design, when we talked about traffic, so that all the council knew sort of like points when we were going to be talking things and then sort of a target time that we were getting things to the council. And I think that we're at a point, or maybe even overdue, that we should be doing that on this project so that folks understand what our next 3, 4, 5, 6 meetings may look like and when it may come to the
I'm hoping we're not as
well,
Mr. President.
I apologize. What bad choice it was. What I meant by that was when we did the original Austin Street schedule, we laid out quite a number of meetings. So we've already had 2, 3, 4, 5, so maybe we're at a point where we're narrowing it down. I think it's only fair for our colleagues to understand what their schedules are going to look like over the course of the next 2, 3 months with holidays, extra meetings, and I think it's also fair to the public and fair to the petitioner to understand kind of where
I will represent to my colleagues in the public that Councilor Schwartz and I will sit down with the president, probably our committee clerk and Ms. Anand, and try to map out a schedule for this. You know, unlike Austin Street, which was very involved, we now have a proposed different design. Welcome that proposal. I don't want to take away from it, but it does change how we approach it. It's another factor and a significant factor we need to consider. So,
small point then.
Sure.
Two things. Actually, so after the public hearing, we're going to talk about the two different design options. So I guess before the public speaks, if there's anyone here from Foster Street, when I saw those voluminous color drawings in our packet, all I could think of is if I've lived on in any one of those properties, I wouldn't want to have towering arborvitaes shading my backyard. So I just wanted to throw that out there as a, you know, there's different ways to do things, different ways to screen, and maybe everybody on the street.
The arborvitaes are there under either plan A or B.
I realize that, but it's just landscaping, so it's something I think we could talk about. And I'm suggesting that the public might want, and if we live on Foster Street, sure, might want to think about that.
And if I could, thank you. I would respond that this was a preliminary feedback. We're happy to sit with our Foster Street abutters and talk about, you know, individual landscaping plans. This was our first shot at what we thought might be an option given the evergreen nature and the visibility and the protection, but we're happy to have that discussion further as what's appropriate in each instance.
It probably makes sense to have some of those discussions before the 29th, because regardless of which proposal, you're going to need to do some screening here. Councilor Auchincloss? I'm sorry, were you all set, Councilor Clausley? I want to hold off. I will get to it. Go ahead.
I tried to make sure this question wasn't redundant because I know I came late, but options A and B are now the only two options on the table. The 170-plus option is now totally off the table.
We'd be happy to go back to additional density and moving the height back if people wanted that direction. We thought we were responding to what we heard at the last hearing. So if the majority of folks want us to go back and revisit that direction, we're happy to.
Well, I think it would be a useful process point for us to know if we're debating between three or two options here. I mean,
it's the developer's proposal, so if they want to put all three out there, we can discuss all three. If they're now telling us they want to do just two, we'll just do two. It's really up to the developer.
Yes, we'd be happy to have you debate that third option, which is the 171 units that we filed.
Okay, so you'd like us to look at all three?
At this time, yes.
Okay. And probably not a bad process point if that was a starting point and they still want to do that, at least it's a basis of comparison.
Okay. And second question is, under either options A or B, you don't intend to change the 25% affordable threshold?
That's correct.
Okay.
Anything else that you want to present? Any other questions for the developer? Anything else, Attorney Buchbinder, that you want to present this evening?
No, we're all set. Thank you.
Okay. Councilor Schwartz.
Both are right, but that's okay. So I just wanted to clarify. So option A minus or A plus or whatever, the one before A that Councilor Auchincloss referred to, just to be clear, that was the one that had more of a fenestration on Washington Place, right? And that was not stepped back from Washington as much. And that had more units as well.
Okay.
Is that right?
Did you want to add something? Councilor, I'm sorry.
Just want to make sure that's how I have it in my mind. I just want to make sure.
It had the full five stories at that location.
Full five stories, not steps back.
Correct.
And on Washington Terrace, it wasn't quite as filled in, right?
Correct. Okay.
Yeah, it was not as deep. Yeah.
Okay.
Councilor Baker?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a visitor to this conversation from time to time, and I won't be able to fill the whole evening, but I think there are probably members of the board of the council who are not here, who may share my challenge, and that is to sort of know what project I'm dealing with at any particular time. And we now have three versions, apparently, in play. And I think part of the challenge that I'm going to just raise with you in terms of the report, but also the planning department and everything else that comes to us, is to sort of keep track of where we are, because I've heard comments about the initial proposal, I've heard comments about modifications to the proposal, and we're going to hear comments about modifications to the modifications. So I think part of the challenge is to keep us abreast of where ultimately the public is on which one and what are we going to vote on. There's one of the difficulties of this process is you certainly want developers to be responsive to public input, but at the same time, there's a question about, in fact, what are we ultimately going to consider and how do we make sense of it in the context.
We're going to vote on one project that comes out of this committee. I think what the developer's asking for is some feedback as often happens in the land use committee process, as my colleagues are aware, there are iterations of projects that change, there are choices that have to be made, and they're asking us for some guidance and opinion. I think that's fair, and I've spoken with Ms. Young about this, and this is within the context of the application for the special permit. It's not like this is a wholly different project, which I want to be very careful we don't get to that point.
I understand, and
Before I take public comment, I will ask next time if our planning and legal departments can help us parse out what we may and may not consider regarding the financial pro formas and impact of a project. I understand, we've been given this guidance before, that the developers' pro formas, what they seek to make or not to make in a project, are not in our purview. I understand that. I think we could use some reminder and guidance of that. I'd also like some guidance then, since we've heard a lot about whether or not commercial or more commercial or different configuration of commercial and residential is appropriate here, how we square that with the reminder that we may not consider the financials, because part of the reason the developer has repeatedly now told us about not wanting more commercial here is it's not feasible from their point of view financially, or not as feasible financially. So if we can get some guidance, particularly from a legal point of view, Attorney Young, I think it would be helpful for us as we deliberate. It will also be helpful for the public, I think, as well. So with that, I'm going to start off. How many people who have not spoken previously on this project wish to speak tonight? All right. I'm going to take those folks first. I'm then going to go to the Newtonville area council people. I'm going to try to get some additional public comment after that, but I've got to reserve some time for my colleagues to have some discussion. It's vitally important, and I think it's important for the public to hear our thoughts, at least initially. So I'm going to start off in the front row. This gentleman, come on up, please, right to the podium here, sir. Just cut through your neighbors, please. And then anybody else in the first row who's not spoken before on this project, anyone in the second row, you can line up after them. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Jim Purdy. I live at 943 Chestnut Street in Upper Falls. I'm an urban planner. Started in 1975 working for a guy named Phil Hare. Most of my career is focused on the connection between transportation and land use. And when we talk about green or sustainable and so forth, a lot of that has to do with how the land use supports sustainable transportation. So, you know, it's easy to use transit-oriented development as kind of a jargon term, but I think the key thing is it's not that people, you know, will use transit instead of cars and therefore reduce traffic. The traffic engineer has actually said that they're not using, you know, any discount for the fact that some people will use transit. But it's the other way around, that a development like this will increase patronage for transit, you know, specifically for the express bus, the commuter rail, and to me the most important is the 59 bus, which is a crucial cross-town service. And it's like chicken and egg. You know, if there's enough patronage, the service will get better, and I think Newton is in a position to bargain for better frequency on that bus, particularly because there's another development, you know, among the mayor's top priorities in my neighborhood that's also served by the 59 bus. So I think that there's a real benefit of having a sufficient number of units along that bus route is that the service will get better. If I was going to move to this development, I know that I would use transit to get downtown, transit to get to Harvard Square via Watertown, transit to get up the street to the library and then to Newton Highlands where I can get the Green Line and so forth. So I think in that respect, it really is a very closely tied to transit. The other aspect here is it's mixed use, and ground floor retail is an important component. When the turnpike came through in the 60s, you know, it really divided Newtonville, the business district of Newtonville. This would create activity that would help to pull people, you know, in both directions across that gap, and I think that that is really important. You know, maybe I'll stop there, but I think that the upshot of this, which seems to be a well-considered, well-designed development proposal, is that there would be much more activity, vitality, people on the sidewalk, and it would make Newtonville Village a better place to live and do business.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. And again, you're always welcome to supplement your comments in writing to anyone. Come on up next, please.
Good evening.
Hi, my name is Alan Staff. I'm a lifelong resident of Newton. I grew up in Newton Highlands. I currently live in Auburndale, and I am the owner of the Boston Showcase Company on Winchester Street in Newton. I am certainly affected every day by development going on around the city, being on Winchester Newton Street area. And the development that I see going on is all good. And what I see in frequenting the Newtonville area is a lack of vitality. It's an area that seems to have been neglected from what I see, and I think that this project would be something that would be good to spur some growth and some vitality in the area, and I think it would be a good thing for the city. That's all I say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please come on up.
Good evening. My name is Susan Davidoff. I live at 24 Bridge Street, and I'm reading this letter at the request of Josephine McNeil of 53 B Taft Avenue, who was unable to attend this evening. To Chairman Laredo, members of the Land Use Committee, other councillors in attendance, city staff, and those in the audience, I am writing in support of the Washington Place project. If approved, it will provide the opportunity for 26 low-income households and 17 moderate-income households to live in Newton, one of the wealthiest communities in the Commonwealth. But for projects such as Washington Place, individuals and families in these low-income ranges would have little or no opportunity to benefit from all that Newton has to offer, especially to those low-income families. A lottery will provide them the opportunity to move into new apartments with proximity to public transportation, shopping, parks, and other amenities. For those families moving into Newton with children, their children will have the benefits of an excellent public school system which could impact their life choices. I would like to take this opportunity to address and refute one of the reasons that has been posited to criticize the project, the loss of nationally affordable housing. No housing is nationally affordable in a capitalistic society, whether we like it or not. The market determines the cost of housing, especially rental housing, unless some governmental action intervenes. While the rent charged for a particular unit might be lower at a particular point in time, there is no guarantee that it will not increase or, in a rare instance, decrease depending upon the parties involved. In fact, we are experiencing that phenomenon now in the metro Boston area, and it is fueling an increased rate of homelessness for families. Property owners are responding to the lack of apartments in the market by not renewing leases and raising rents to a level unaffordable to a minimum and low-wage workers who occupy these units, thereby forcing them out into a market in which they cannot find a unit affordable to them. On the other, there is no automatic direct correlation between the amount of rent for a particular apartment and the rent the occupant pays. In many instances, that supposedly natural affordable apartment is being rented to a household who could well afford to pay more if one makes that determination. Newton's inclusionary ordinance is the governmental interference I mentioned earlier, which will ensure that the rents for the low and moderate income units at Washington Place remain affordable, consistent with the market into perpetuity. A vote in favor of Washington Place in the requested rezoning is a vote to increase housing options for that Newton senior citizen downsizing or living on fixed income, as well as that moderate income wage earner who wishes to remain or to move into Newton. I urge you to vote in favor of the Washington Place petition.
Thank you. Next, please come on up. Anybody else on this side of the room who has not spoken previously, I'm going to take you first to get this line up. Good evening.
Hello, my name is Ada Schellig, and I live at 274 Newtonville Avenue. My parents moved our family to Newton 15 years ago so my sister and I could attend the Newton public school system, and I am in support of this project for a few reasons. Newtonville has improved much over the past 15 years, and the retail space and residential units will bring in more people and bring the community together with a new and inviting space. When my friends and family want to go out to eat and shop, we find ourselves going to Newton Center and Chestnut Hill due to the limited options in Newtonville. I also graduated college in 2014 and have been living at home with my parents to save money. I understand the struggle of working post-graduation, having to deal with the student loans, and believe that the affordable units will be extremely beneficial for new graduates and families, and families looking to move their family to the Newton area just so their kids can go to school. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Tamara Bliss, and I have lived at 9 Lewis Street for 48 years. I regularly shop and do errands in Newtonville, and I'm very familiar with the neighborhood. I strongly support the plan for mixed-use development at Washington Place. Like most Newton seniors, my husband and I want to stay here as we grow older, but we are deeply concerned about the severe shortage of accessible one-floor housing options in our village centers. As a Newton Home volunteer, I have had the good fortune to meet many amazing Newton seniors, ranging in age from 60 to 103. These seniors prize their independence and are determined to remain in the city as they grow older. However, many no longer drive and need assistance in maintaining their homes and yards. And many would like to simplify their lives by downsizing to an apartment or condo. But sadly, such housing is very scarce, especially in convenient village centers. I'd like to share with you some relevant data from both the U.S. Census and an in-depth study of older Newton residents commissioned by our own Newton Council on Aging and conducted by the UMass Boston Gerontology Institute. Today, one-third of Newton households has a member who's 60 or older. We seniors are your fastest-growing part of the population, and by 2030, we will make up more than one-third of Newton's population. Our seniors have lived here, many of them for more than 25 years, and many for 45 years or longer. And according to the data collected by UMass, an amazing 88% want to stay and age in Newton. Why is Washington Place an appealing option for me and other seniors? First of all, accessible one-floor living. No longer have to climb stairs. We may have health issues, we can't do that. Shovel snow or mow the lawn. Second, the opportunity to give up our cars because we will be able to walk to the supermarket, post office, pharmacy, bank, and restaurants, as well as take the transit that's nearby. Third, and this is very important, is the opportunity to live with families and individuals of all ages and diverse incomes, instead of feeling our only option is a retirement community filled with old folks. And we look forward to enjoying the liveliness of the new public plaza, the park, restaurants, and stores, a more vibrant Newtonville. The developer has responded to both neighborhood and citywide concerns by significantly increasing the number of affordable units, reducing the height of the buildings, and adding a small park. And I'm particularly pleased that they are pioneers in offering housing for middle-income units. Remember, these are our teachers, police, fire, other city employees who'd like to live in a place where they work. The developer is also planning a number of initiatives to encourage car-free living, such as charging separately for the parking, especially for a second parking place, subsidizing transit passes, zip cars, Hubway for bikes. I urge you to approve a zone change and special permit to support Washington Place so we can increase housing options for Newton seniors who want to enjoy a car-free living in Newtonville. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please, if you haven't spoken previously on this project, come on up, please. And I know that's disappointing for others who want to speak, but I'm trying to give everyone an opportunity to be heard. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Doris Ann Sweet, and I live at 281 Washington Street. I've lived in the city for 38 years. When I first heard about this project, I was pretty excited because, frankly, I've always thought that block was kind of ugly. But as the plans have grown, have come forward, and there have been modifications based on community input, I've become even more excited about this project. And there are many things that I could say that I like about it, but I'm choosing to just look at a couple of the purposes that appear for the Mixed Use 4 district. First of all, we all know, the first one I'm going to talk about is expanding the diversity of housing options available in the city. And we all know that in the greater Boston area, we are experiencing a severe housing shortage, and if that continues, will have a very negative effect on our economy. We also know that there are precious few housing units in Newton that are small scale, affordable, and accessible. This project will make a significant contribution to providing smaller units to the city's housing stock, including studio to three-bedroom size units, and 25% of the units will be designated affordable in perpetuity for families with incomes ranging from 30 to 100%, 120% of the area median income. While some argue that affordable units will be lost when the current buildings are demolished for the project, my question would be how many of those current units are accessible, and I would guess very few, if any. Newton's rapidly increasing population of older citizens and many others who have mobility issues or need, for instance, to maneuver strollers or carriages, aside from affordability, will require units that are accessible. And then the second purpose of MU4 that I would like to address is the one that states a purpose is to promote the health and well-being of residents by encouraging physical activity, use of alternative modes of transportation, and creating a sense of place and community. The combination of retail space, office space, community space, and living space will make this site a site where many of the activities and functions of a typical life can be carried out within walking distance. With adjacent public transit to Boston, or even to Worcester, the bike-friendly lanes and parking capacity and availability of zip cars, it will be possible to live without automobile ownership. The public spaces and activities, indoors and out, will encourage movement within the immediate neighborhood. And just across Washington Street, public spaces and activities will be part of the Austin Street project as well. Surely, this will encourage a sense of place and community.
Thank you very much. Next, please. Anybody on this side of the room who's not spoken before? Anyone? Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. My name is Philip Hare. I live at 20 Marlborough Street in Newton Corner. I've sent a letter to you earlier indicating my strong support for the development, so I'm not going to repeat that. I'd rather like to speak to the action that's being proposed to rezone from two different zones into one. That is, to go from having a site divided between Business 1 and Business 2 and make it Mixed Use 4. The option of the Mixed Use 4 district in this city's zoning a few years ago created a district type that is unlike older districts in that, among other things, it's truly a two-dimensional in its specifying of differences in allowed uses, required setbacks, which gets managed both horizontally and vertically. That's specifically intended to create a context
it would be appropriate for both residents and businesses in the same space. Mixed Use 4 is an outstanding piece of sensitive regulation. It's far in advance of the city's much older business districts such as Business 1 and Business 2, despite their recent rewriting. The first application for Mixed Use 4 was Austin Street. Six competing bidders for the site submitted designs which illustrated the range of possibilities that are allowable within that zoning. That resulted in a selected development which, when completed, will be an admirable asset for both Newtonville and the city at large. Rezoning the Washington Place site will make it possible for another asset for both that neighborhood and the city to be divided. Failure to approve the rezoning will result in future development on that site being as carefully controlled as it would be true if the rezoning is approved. Hopefully, the step forward in adopting more appropriate zoning for the location will be approved independent of whether the present development proposal is approved or not. The zoning has merit regardless of the approval or not of your current development proposal. Hopefully the rezoning will not, as is often the case in Newton, but rare elsewhere, be dependent upon the project being approved. Thank you.
Next, please come on up.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm Marion Knapp. I live in Chestnut Hill on Hamilton Parkway. I speak to you tonight as a private citizen. However, my thoughts about the Washington Place proposal come from my many years of involvement as an advocate for seniors and as a member and chair of the Newton Council on Aging, and also from my own experience as an older adult. I've lived in Newton for just about 47 years. As you probably know, this year Newton achieved membership into the World Health Organization, AARP, Age-Friendly Livable Community Network. It was a great honor for us to achieve that. We initiated this application because of the dramatically increasing number of older people in our city and the need to address the issues that our aging population faces. Newton was awarded this net designation not because we have achieved age friendliness and livability, but because we have committed to a process to achieve our own goals. We have called the work ahead of us as planning for a livable, all age friendly Newton. There are 10 livability domains within plan, and one of the most important is improving the availability of affordable and accessible housing. The World Health Organization and AARP stress that the work to be done is not about seniors alone. By improving the lives of older adults, the lives of everyone in the community are enhanced. The Washington Square Project is an important contribution to the city's efforts to increase available housing stock for a broad range of people of different ages, income levels, and physical capabilities. The wide scope of unit sizes offers options to single people, families, employees of the departments of the city, and of course, downsizing seniors. It is essential that we acknowledge the changes that are happening here in Newton and work in a meaningful, proactive, and positive way to meet shifting needs. This project is a very worthy project, and will go a long way in helping to achieve our age-friendly livability goals, and I support it.
Thank you very much. Next, please. Come on up, sir.
Good evening.
Hi. My name is Simon O'Leary. I live on Auburn Street, and I own a property in Newton Corner also as a rental. Since I'm almost last, this will be much shorter. I don't want to repeat too
much. You're not. I have other people I know want to speak after you. Go ahead, sir.
Two things. I currently have a relative living in my rental unit at a greatly reduced rate, simply because they couldn't find affordable housing here, and I wanted them to live here. I'd like to see our community provide more affordable housing. I drive from Newton Corner and Auburndale, since I have units there, more than I care to think about. And it seems to me that going through that part of Newton where this development will be is one of the better, certainly it's the best part of that whole street. Because you get the West Newton and, you know, they get three lanes going into one. But anything that would help us turn into Newtonville would be great coming west. I'm glad we're looking at the traffic, and I hope after that we look at Newton Corner and Auburndale. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else who's not spoken before wishes to speak this evening? Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is John Barkin. I live on Lockwood Road in West Newton, Massachusetts. I've lived there for approximately 11 years with my wife and two sons. My family's been in the real estate business for about 50 years in the area. We own and operate approximately 1,300 units of affordable housing throughout New England, several of which are here in Massachusetts, one of which is in the town of Newton, known as New Falls Apartments, approximately a 60-unit development that incorporates 20 market-rate units, 20 affordable units, and 20 elderly units. We also own the Chestnut Hill Medical Center in Chestnut Hill. When I first learned of this project through a mutual friend, it certainly was of interest to me. Specifically, when I heard about it, what really stuck out to me was that they were going to make some significant improvements to an area that certainly, in my opinion, needs help. The infrastructure in that particular area, in my personal opinion, is dated and drastically in a need for improvement. But more importantly, from someone who has a tremendous amount of expertise in housing and affordable housing, specifically residential, is the developer looking to create an area where you deal with both the local housing needs, most importantly, paying specific attention to the needs of the elderly and those that cannot afford apartments in the area. The person approached me again and said, I'd like you to come and you speak on behalf of the development. And I said, well, I really can't do that unless I have a chance to meet the person that's in charge of doing the project. I can give you my personal opinion. I think it's certainly very attractive. I think that retail in the area drastically needs to be improved. But let me meet the person and get an understanding of what their opinion and what they're really trying to accomplish is. Several weeks ago, I had the opportunity. I was invited over to Mr. Corp's home. The two of us sat for a few hours and discussed what he was trying to accomplish. And immediately what I found from that was somebody that was tremendously passionate about this project, clearly had a vision, and clearly wanted to address the needs of this community, certainly in areas that they're not being addressed currently. I left that meeting feeling very good about the project, and certainly that's something that I felt that I could support and was willing to put my name to. Living in Newton, I understand that people very often here are not open to a lot of change, and it doesn't come easily. About 40 years ago, my father, when we were first in the construction business, really was responsible for constructing the vast majority of Route 9 as we know it now, from the Chestnut Hill Mall all the way to what was Star Market at the time. My godfather, Dan Rothenberg, was the developer of all of that real estate. And, you know, I think what it says about that is that you can build things that do stand the test of time. Development does not always have to be something where you are simply trying to take from the community, just the opposite. If you maintain it long-term, you design something that both is physically attractive, but that creates use for people that they want to come to, it can be successful. One of the women that spoke earlier...
I'm going to ask you to wrap up if you
would,
sir.
I would be happy to. One of the women that spoke earlier really kind of hit it on, really in all the right places, where she said, who wants to live in a community where there are people of all different ages and types participating, a place where people will go to and a place where people will congregate? Newtonville in that particular area is in desperate need of that, Personally, I love Chestnut Hill. I really don't want to drive all the way over there when you can experience that kind of living over here. So really what I'd ask of you is to, I hear a lot during this last 2 hours about all the dotting of the I's and crossing of the T's of why not. What I would really say is try and focus on the big picture of why. Are you creating something that is an improvement, a place where people want to go, and that will stand the test of time?
Thank you, sir. Next, please. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for letting me speak tonight. My name is Elaine Rush-Aruda. I live at 1921 Commonwealth Avenue, and I promise to be brief. My biggest concern with this project is the height and the traffic on Washington Street. I think five stories sets a dangerous precedent. I have chosen to live within walking distance of West Newton Square for 26 years, and I would be mortified to see anything taller than three stories in that area, and it concerns me that Washington Street could continue on all the way to the development that's proposed, that type of development could go all the way down to West Newton Square, and that concerns me. The traffic, I have a comment just given the recent changes to the Mass Pike, and I was curious whether a future study could be done, given that I think the traffic patterns will change because a toll has been added between Newton Corner and West Newton. That I think may be significant, so I'm hoping someone would look at that. And lastly, I am anxious to see what all the options are, particularly without a zoning change.
Thank you very much. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Ellen Serino. I live at 12 Hamlin Road in Newton Center. I've lived in Newton almost 30 years. Almost 20 years, excuse me. I was talking to one of my neighbors not long ago and telling him that I was attending these meetings. And he said, you know, one of the reasons that he chose to live on our street is that all of the buildings on the street are proportional. And I said, you know, that's why I'm going to these meetings, because I think it's important to the beauty of the area to have things be proportional. And it reminds me of one of the things that my Grammy said to me when I was little. And my Grammy was never wrong. She said, you can't put a quart in a pint pot. And I think that anything that's five stories is just too overwhelming for that lot. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is John Martin. I live at 12 Simpson Terrace in Newtonville. I, like so many of the speakers before me, agree that we should build rental housing in our village center. I think this particular project is appropriate because of its proximity to transit. I think it's appropriate because, even at five stories, especially at five stories, because of its relationship to the street. It's on the north side of the street. The shadows it casts are primarily on the parking lot behind it. There's a, as was mentioned in the presentation, Washington Street has a wide right-of-way of over 80 feet. Additionally, it looks as though the developer has taken pains to set the building back from the lot line, creating a wider, more pedestrian-friendly sidewalk along Washington Street as well as along Walnut Street, which I think is a benevolent gesture to the city. And finally, I think, as the slides demonstrated, even though it's de minimis, having less mass against the neighboring abutting properties to the north is probably better. Having more mass against Washington Street does not produce any negative impacts as far as I can see. And finally, I think it's an appropriate project because the architecture is rich, it's varied, it's sensitive to its context, and it's well scaled for the other buildings that are in Newtonville Center. Bottom line, I think it's a great project for our neighborhood, and I think it's a great project for our city. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else who's not spoken previously at a meeting on this topic? All right, seeing none, I know the Newtonville Area Council wants to make out a 15-minute presentation. Mr. Krause, you want to come up and do that? I am then going to try to take a few more public comments. I really have to reserve a good half an hour for us to deliberate, and we're not going to be here after 10 o'clock tonight. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Tom Krause. I live at 480 Walnut Street in Newtonville, and I am the current president of the Newtonville Area Council. To start off, the Newtonville Area Council has been carefully following and discussing the proposed development of Washington Place. We were involved very early in helping the developer engage with the public, and we provided feedback on the preliminary design concept, and are very pleased that the design has evolved, incorporating a number of our suggestions. We have been listening to the residents' views and understand that this is a controversial project and that there is a wide spectrum of views. Some residents strongly oppose the size and density of the proposed development and would prefer a development within the restrictions of current zoning. Others are excited by the proposal and feel it would renew and improve this section of the village. And many opinions are allied in between. As there is so much disagreement, the NAC has opted not to take a position on the issue of rezoning. Our presentation today is not an implied endorsement, but rather something will be built here, and so the Area Council has chosen to consider these two questions. What will it take to get a great project here, and how do we make this development into a real amenity for the village? And with that, I'm going to turn over to our architect of the Area Council, Wayne Koch, for the bulk of the, for a major portion of the presentation.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Koch.
Good evening. My name is Wayne Koch. I'm a resident of Newtonville, and I'm a member of the Newtonville Area Council, and I was hoping to have some visual aids to go along with my talk.
I think we're working on that, but we may be having some technical difficulties. Why don't you get started as best you can, sir?
Okay. To reiterate what Tom said, we want to focus on what it will take to make this a great project for Newtonville, independent of issues around height. We know that this project can bring added vitality to the village and to link the north and south sides of the turnpike, but this requires attention to all the details. The first goal is to make sure that the project reflects and complements the surroundings. We do not think a generic solution, simply an apartment building, is going to be sufficient for the site. So what you were supposed to look at here are the images of the retail development as currently proposed, which I was going to tell you that we really welcome and we really endorse. We think that ground floor retail is essential in maintaining the life of the village. The use of canopies, open storefronts, sidewalk furniture are all welcome additions. We would like to see more, however, going up to the top of the building, whether it's the fourth story, five story, or any elevation of the building, a more active roof line. What we mean by that is projections, cornices, brows, whatever we can do to change and vary the height or change the character of the roof. And if you could look around the village, which now you're looking at images of other villages, other village buildings, you would see that although they're not all architecturally distinguished, they all have a lot of character and a lot of variation in their roof lines. So we would like to see more of that. The developer's original proposal in the 6-story version had more of the tower, and even though that was on the corner of Washington and Walnut Street, and even though that was a relatively small gesture, I think it's a gesture that we would all welcome. I think that the corners of this project are very, very significant. We also think that the current design and its setbacks and wide sidewalks at the base are all designed to improve the pedestrian experience in the village, and we welcome all of those. We do, however, feel that there is incomplete data. I think John Martin, a few moments ago, talked about shadow casts. I think that it would be very beneficial for
for you in reviewing the project, either in a 4 or 5 story version, to be looking at shadow studies to understand exactly where shadows are being cast. I think that we have discovered that given the width of Washington Street and the depth of the site, that there would be very little impact, in fact, to a taller building, but I think that that really requires an actual study to prove that. We understand that the design is evolving and that we're looking at multiple schemes, but we think that there are specific components that need to be fixed and need to be regarded as driven. And that is to maximize setbacks from the abutting property lines, the use of high quality materials on all sides of the buildings, but especially facing public thoroughfares. We think that the current design of the west facade and not running the masonry materials around to the west side is a disservice to the project given the new open character of the corner, of the proposed lot on the corner. And I'm hastening through this since we're not really looking at images. Let's see. We want to talk a little bit about the plaza and the proposed bike lanes on Walnut Street. In the most recent version, the plaza was made slightly smaller due to the addition of bike lanes on Walnut. We're not sure that that really is a benefit either to the project or to the village. We think encouraging north-south bicycle traffic on Lowell rather than Walnut might actually be a preferable solution, and we think that taking away area from the plaza in order to accommodate those two bike lanes, which don't actually connect with any other bike paths at the current time, may not be a very good use of space. We also understand that the use of retail, whether it's associated with the pocket park or the plaza, and the mix of the retail is absolutely critical to the vitality of those spaces. So we welcome the fact that those public open spaces are being added to the village, but we also understand that it's incumbent upon the developer to make sure that appropriate retail is associated with those open spaces to make them vital spaces as well. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else, Ms. Cross, anyone else in the area council, or are you all set?
Yes, we actually wanted to talk about transportation and one other issue.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Is this?
Because we didn't, I will distribute the PowerPoint to your committee and also post it.
If you do it through Ms. Khan, she'll make sure we get it in.
In terms of traffic, we strongly support the addition of the additional southbound lane on Walnut Street. But as Wayne stated, we are concerned about the width of the plaza trade-off against the bike lanes. The new design with the shorter pedestrian crossings is, I think, particularly good because I think we will increase dramatically the amount of pedestrian activity from the south side and the north side with a more dynamic retail sector on the north. Part of the issue on the Walnut Street issues in terms of the bike lanes is that south of the bridge, The city is committed to a hardscape update, and in the vision statement, it shows the wider sidewalks so that bike lanes cannot continue south of the bridge anyway. So it's only a two-block long bike lane. However, we strongly support the West Newton to Newton Center protected bike track, and would feel that this might be important to have this designed into this section of the design right now. The Lowell Avenue intersection is only tangentially included in the developer's proposal, and with the we feel that with the combination of the Austin Street lot and the this project, we will see increased travel from Walnut onto Lowell, and that the proposed reductions of travel lanes from four lanes to two lanes along Washington Street will really mean that it's critical that these two lights, which are fairly close to each other, are synchronized. So we strongly feel that either the developer or the city should incorporate resignalization of this intersection as well. In terms of traffic planning, the model was really quite impressive, I thought, today. However, one piece that's not included in the model is south on Walnut Street, and the council during the Austin Street Partners stated specifically that Austin Street and Walnut needed traffic mitigation, and so we are strongly encouraging the city to accelerate the redesign of Walnut Street so that it can be blended with this project, so when it's all done, it works properly. In terms of parking, when Austin Street Partners is fully deployed and occupied, there will not be surplus parking on the south side. And the area at the moment that is most convenient is the south side of Washington Street. And so we should consider that that is not underutilized parking relative to this project. So we think that focusing the parking for the consumers of the retail is important within the site and also along Walnut Street to the north. So we encourage the developer to utilize the underground parking and maybe expand the underground parking to also include employee parking, building staff, and residential guest parking for which limited controlled access parking is viable. That's my section. Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Mark Kaufman. I live at 553 Walnut Street in Newtonville, and I'm going to talk about community benefits of the project. And they fall into four categories. The first one is linking Washington Place to the rest of the village. Second, improvements to the Newtonville MBTA commuter rail station. Three, rethinking community space within the building. And finally, sustainability and LEED certification. So Lauren sort of answers all of our concerns. Newtonville has three projects occurring at the same period. Washington Place, DPW's hardscape changes to the commercial section of Walnut Street in 2018, and the Austin Street development. We request that the landscape architect and urban planner for Washington Place continue their work over the bridge and into the village center, up to the senior center, so we have a coordinated look and feel between both sides of the bridge. Further, we request that the Washington Place landscape architect take the lead in coordinating plans among the three projects, Washington Place, Austin Street, and the DPW. And finally, we'd like to bring elements of Washington Place over the bridge. For example, unique lighting on Washington Street could be used at the bases of the bridge and maybe on both sides of the bridge and on top of the bridge if DOT allows. But we're looking for elements that would work on both sides of the bridge. The number one request at public meetings was to make the train station handicap accessible and user-friendly to the elderly and families with strollers and baby carriages, and to those of us who walk down those steps in the winter and are scared to death. We've been told that making the station accessible right now by adding two elevators would cost between $20 and $30 million. We would like to ask the developer to fund a feasibility study of locating a new train access point on Washington Street across from the Verizon building. The elevation, as you can see on the left-hand side photograph, is dramatically lower on the Washington Street side than at the top of the bridge. And we wondered if one could construct a series of ramps from Washington Street to a new raised platform on the north side track, thereby making the station handicapped accessible at a low cost. Auburndale will shift to north side tracks when its elevator is installed. The MBTA could use north side tracks for all three Newton stops in the future. Note the elevation in the photograph and the train on the north side of the track. Next, rethinking community space. The current project has a 2,000-foot community room in the building, and we wonder if this is the best use of 2,000 feet. Could 2,000 feet, for example, be converted into two additional affordable apartments or a number of micro-units for a millennial population? And if we did that, is there any way to make Washington Place qualify for the city inventory? And the final request has to do with sustainability and LEED certification, so I think Lauren has answered all of our questions, and her program sounded excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else from the Newtonville Area Council, Mr. Krause? Wonderful. Thank you very much. How many other people, I'm trying to budget time here, folks. How many other people wish to speak this evening? All right. I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Why don't we do this? Why don't we start in the front row? Come on up. I'm going to really urge you, please, please, please try to keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less. I need to give some time to my colleagues, and I think you will benefit from our discussion about some of the things that we've heard this evening. Good evening.
My name is Susan Leifler. I live at 11 Clapham Place in Newtonville, and I'm just up here to answer your question about what is a transit-oriented development. Very few people know what it means. This is what it means. It's a concept developed by the Transit-Oriented Development Institute of the U.S. Department of Transportation. It means that the housing, the structures, and the stores in the location match or are appropriate for the transit capacity of that location. The TODI developed this whole classification scheme. The highest level would be an urban center. The lowest level would be a transit neighborhood. A transit neighborhood has three-story buildings, no more than that, has local stores serving the local neighborhood. It has frequent transportation, buses and trains. They run every 5 or 10 minutes. I'm sorry to tell you that Newtonville Center does not even meet the threshold of a transit neighborhood. So the answer to your question is Washington Place, which is four stories, is not a transit-oriented development because the structure does not match the very limited transit capacity of Newtonville Center. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have the document I can send you with more details.
Why don't
I'll
you
do
send
that.
It to our committee clerk and she'll make sure we get it. That'd be very helpful. Thank you. Next, please. Next. Come on up. Good evening.
Good evening. Kathleen Crowe, Grazer, 258 Mill Street, Newtonville. I urge you to deny a rezoning and special permit for the project as proposed, all three versions. I am confident that the petitioner can further reduce the height, mass, number of units, and average unit size, and increase the proportion of state-recognized affordable units so that all units count on the SHI. Evidence of the Court Street project nearby suggests that developers often plead uneconomic even when they can afford to reduce the project size. Option B presents four stories, and that's an improvement, but three stories would be better. But option B as presented appears to make things worse for the Foster Street abutters. So option B seems to be an attempt to split off the Foster Street neighbors from the rest of us in Newtonville who oppose the project as presented and continue to advocate for a project of the height and scale that fits our village center. Looking at those renderings of how the project would loom over the Foster Street backyards under any of the options was distressing. How would Mr. Corf's neighbors on Dartmouth Street and West Newton Hill feel if he built a massive project looming over their backyards? How would any of the city council members like to have something like that looming over their backyards? A number of speakers have talked about the benefits to seniors and for those eligible for the lottery for subsidized units, and there's no reason why those speakers' preferences can't be accommodated. But on a smaller scale, that's in keeping with our neighborhood, our village. None of these options are good enough. The petitioner can do better, and here are some ways. Reduce the height to 3 stories. Reduce the number of units. Reduce the average size of units. Ditch the workforce units because they're not recognized by the state. And make the project 100% SHI eligible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please, come on up. Good evening.
Hi there. My name is Ellen Fitzpatrick. I live on Foster Street, where I have lived for almost 40 years. It's, I must say, disconcerting to listen to this parade of people from Chestnut Hill and elsewhere describing the deficiencies of this neighborhood, which has been such a wonderful place to live over the last several decades, so much so that our neighbors a decade ago, spent almost 3 years working with the then Board of Aldermen and a number of other city agencies to establish one of Newton's 4 local historic districts. I must say that the most dismaying aspect of this whole enterprise of sitting through these meetings and hearing about this development has been the inattention of this council and the city agencies and the developer and so many other people who have spoken to the fact that this development would abut, share a boundary with one of Newton's 4 local historic districts. There are many places to put a very large development, but the choice of putting this on this particular boundary without ever acknowledging that in planning department reports, drawing in that boundary. Tonight we saw a slideshow which showed our rather barren springtime backyards without the grand Victorian homes that sit in front of those that would be dwarfed by a building that would be the height of putting almost two of those homes on top of each other. I do think it's progress to hear the developer talk about a reduction in the height of the project, and I'm sure our neighbors will discuss this further, but I want to make just two final points. One, the comment was made that the development would not be as close as the existing building, the Boston Ballet building, but just to call attention to the City Council that these are very sleepy buildings right now. Nothing goes on at night. Nothing. It's dark behind us. And we're talking about a situation where we'd have 170 apartments with lighting that will be intrusive. Finally, I wish that to note that the discussion of this lays out a series of goods, diversity, support for millennials, support for senior citizens, support for low-income people. We could add mom, apple pie, the American flag to the list. And then, presumably on the other side, are those who, what, don't support these things? All of us who live in this neighborhood have lived lives that have been dedicated to many of those issues. And I, for one, resent creating this bifurcated view that you're either in favor of diversity and low-income housing, or you're, and you support this development, or you're against the development and you don't support those things. And I would hope that our city government and our elected officials would see that distinction and support the citizens, at least in acknowledging our existence. My mailbox is stuffed when you run for re-election with your flyers talking about your dedication to the citizens that live in Newton now. They don't say, we'll ignore you, but we'll focus on the people that will live here someday, maybe. So all we're asking for is for you to attend to the whole picture and to work with all of us, not simply the developer, in having the best outcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next, please. Sir, in the back, ma'am. Are those the last two comments of the evening? Okay, go ahead, please.
My name is Paul Zarkin, and I live in on Frederick Street in Newtonville. I just want to talk about this one thing that's associated with the project, and that is Washington Street going down from four lanes to two lanes. I mean, I'm an engineer. It seems like a catastrophe if you do that, but I have a positive suggestion to make, because perhaps I'm wrong on that issue. I suggest that what you do is you actually block off two of the lanes right now, you know, with cones, and see exactly what happens. And if I'm right, you'll see that there'll be a tremendous protest. But I say do it so that you'll see exactly what will happen. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please, come on up. Pardon?
I'll just clarify that that does not...
I'm sorry, what was the question?
The gentleman was under the impression that two lanes on Washington Street are going to be closed, but it's not the case.
No, I understand that.
I think it'd be helpful to clarify for
the question is Walnut Street, not Washington Street, just for the record. But thank you. Good evening, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Stephanie DeSantis. I live at the Future and Road in Watertown, Mass. My grandparents have owned and I had lived in Newton. They own a house and live there for the past 65 years. I am here to support this because we want to make sure that it's about not just the building. We want to make sure that we understand what Robert is about. He's a citizen of Newton, and he believes in this building. But he believes in this building because it's about his legacy. It's about the fact that his family has lived here. He's taking his life savings, his dreams of having a different life that he had planned, that has totally changed. And he loves the city enough to take his own money and put it into something to beautify not just for here, but for everybody that lives in the city. No matter if it's south, north, east, west. And that's what it's also about. It's about who he is. He's come to these meetings and done more drawings than probably most builders ever will give you. They want to work with you, they want to support you, they want to care about you. Because why? Because he lives here. That's what it's about. It's about making sure that it's the city that we all love. And there's not many developers that are willing to do what he's willing to do. And for the money, that's another part of it. The amount of money that he's willing to fund out of his own pocket that most of us would never do. And I want to make sure that it's really clear about what he's bringing to the table, his team is bringing to the table. And so if you're for or against it, he's willing to work with you to make this a legacy, not only for himself and his family, but for all the dreams that they'll never have that others will have in that building. And I'd like you to keep in mind, we are the city, we are the Garden City, and this can be beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else who wishes to speak this evening? This is not the last time you'll have an opportunity to be heard. Okay, seeing none, I know Ms. Anand had some presentations she wanted to give us. I'd like, though, before, we'll see what the time permits to put her on, because it's obviously we want the planning department's perspective, but the developers put out at least a couple of proposals, really three, if we count the way Councilor Auchincloss counted. I'd like to get some preliminary feedback or questions from my colleagues so we can at least initiate the discussion. Councilor Crosby, you want to start us off? Let's not try to have a long debate here, but just some brief initial commentary which will help both guide the developer and promote thought among us as a body. Go ahead.
Well, after listening to the public, I want to pick up on the Newtonville Area Council and some of the very, I thought, astute comments they made and the perspective they made them from, which I thought was very thoughtful to talk about, okay, something's going to get built here. What's going to make it really great? And they touched on, especially Mr. Koch, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but others as well, a lot of the bullet points I wanted to raise that make me favorable toward one of the, feel more favorably toward one of the schemes. So I want to say why first. It's really difficult to connect a village that's torn in half by a highway. And this project is straining to do that. So the relationship of a three-story building to that vast expanse of, you know, that bleeding edge is never going to work to do that, at least visually. I agree with the, I believe it was Mr. Koch who said, you know, you need something really to anchor the corner, that the corners of this complex, which is going to appear as several buildings, and its face toward Washington Street, really need to make a more powerful statement. So statement is one thing, and the, however you detail the corner, I think is important. I like the idea of being able to use the roof in multiple ways. So, you know, oftentimes we ignore our roofscapes. We don't think of them as scapes at all. They're where you bury stuff and you don't look at it. You don't see the roof normally, especially for a big building, from the street level, from the ground level. And in fact, the ground level experience between the 4- and 5-story building, in my view, after looking at all these pictures and so forth and thinking about this and what it feels like to walk down a sidewalk, even a very nice wide sidewalk with trees and so forth, even across the street on another sidewalk looking across, really you're not going to experience the difference between a 4- and 5-story building from the pedestrian perspective. You know, a lot of times architects talk about great buildings, too, in terms of the way they meet the sky. And the Newtonville Area Council addressed that point by talking about the importance of varying the roof line. And that helps to bring sort of scale and interest to the building and make it more scaled toward people. They talked about it specifically in terms of balconies and roof decks and so forth, which I think the one scheme that sets part of the building back and gives, you know, roof decks and so forth on the outside for outside living experiences for people, whether it's group gatherings or specific to one unit, I think is both meets the sky in a better way, putting most of the mass toward Washington Street and much less of the mass toward the residential area behind. So for other reasons, I like, you can tell I'm going toward the scheme A that we saw tonight with a partial fifth story, but using those setbacks as the scheme A proposes to do versus the previous scheme that we looked at, which is more blocky. The last thing we want to do is have, I think, is have, you know, a giant complex that's one big rectangular box. So varying the roof line, varying the facade, doing all those things not only gives you that texture and a nicer environment for people, but it actually also provides better living environments for people. And I think that's a really important part of how this project is going to work better for the people who are in it. And if that's like built-in sustainability, so I think that's one of the points. So I'm really favoring how the massing works when the building is stacked more toward Washington, much more toward the corner of Washington and Walnut, trying to reach across, you know, to that chasm toward the other side of Newtonville. Finally, the building, I believe, is in fact more compact. If we want to design a site, and if we care about conservation of resources and energy, we want a smaller footprint for the building. And the Scheme A does all those things from my point of view. I think they're very practical considerations, too.
Thank you. Councilor Schwartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my comments would just simply be primarily focused on, rather than engaging in a lot of, at least in my part, efforts at redesign or commenting on the looks, which I'm not sure I have much ability on that front or even authority on that front. I think that instead I'd like to focus a little bit more on the overall size and volume of the project. I think that you've tried and you've been incredibly, creative about trying to adjust to some of the comments about height, but I guess the one thing that I'm feeling is missing is that with the change of the alternatives that you've shown us, there's still the same amount of program in there, which I understand might be driven by economics, but I mean, yes, you've reduced by a couple of units, but it's still a very big project, and that's what we're hearing mostly the concerns, and that's what we always are trying to do. We're trying to mitigate. We're trying to find out how to mitigate the adverse impact. So what I'm actually more interested in is not whether it's four or five stories, but more how we're going to manage the impacts on traffic, parking, the public spaces that you're trying to create, which I applaud you for, trying to make sure that those are good public spaces and usable ones with the types of shadow studies that you've provided us. It looks like the plaza that is such a nice addition is going to be in shadow perhaps more of the time if you build more on the parking lot. So I'm more interested in that, and I think that the neighborhood has raised concerns about what more can be done to improve the transit, the quality of the intersections and pedestrian experience, and the knitting of it to the village on the other side of the highway. So I just don't want you to hear only that, we want you to tinker with the design and how the building facade looks. I'm more interested in what wiggle room is there, if any, in adjusting the volume, the sheer amount of program, and the public benefits. So that's where I'm coming from.
Thank you. Councilor Albright, then Councilor Fuller, and then Councilor Lennon.
So I want to start by agreeing with Councilor Crosley that I think that the Newtonville Area Council did a stupendous job in talking about the elements of a great project. And there's a lot to take in with that presentation. It's too bad that the images couldn't come through, but I know you'll give them to us later. I think that we talk about Washington Street as a four-lane street, but we forget about the fact that right next to it is an eight-lane mass turnpike. So we have the four lanes of the Washington Street, and we have the huge gap of the turnpike. And I think that, for me, the five stories, having the four and five-story mix is a no-brainer. But I do look forward to talking with the neighbors on Foster Street, and I think that the three of us will do that. I would have thought that they would prefer the massing to not be as close to them
and therefore they would prefer option A, but they raised the issue of the height and how they feel about the height. So I think the Foster Street neighborhood is a puzzle that we haven't yet solved. I don't know what the solutions can be, but I think there's some creativity there that can help, and I think we need to work with them on that. With respect to the traffic, I don't know, Councillor Schwartz, if you went to the simulation that ran tonight, and it ran once before, but with what they've done with the adding a lane to Walnut Street, along with having parking in a bike lane, really makes a huge difference in the traffic flow through that intersection. The simulation was really quite affirmative in the fact that we're making some progress there. I did want to comment also on the fact that the density. I mean, we put MU4 with five stories and village centers because we need housing in this community, in this region, and what better place to put it than the village center. So having the 171 units doesn't bother me. Having 161 units doesn't bother me, because that achieves a goal that I think we set forth for ourselves when we created the MU4. I wanted to speak one second about Representative Kahn. She had a meeting last week with DOT, and we talked. I haven't talked with her since that meeting, but I know that one of the things that she heard was the possibility that the redesign of the Auburndale station could have an impact on West Newton and Newtonville, because once they're changing the orientation of the tracks in Auburndale, they might consider doing more to the other two stations in Newton. So I haven't followed up with her since that meeting, and I'd like to hear more, because it seems, you know, maybe there's something that could happen and that the developer could contribute to. The shadow studies was raised by the area council. We did receive shadow studies in our packets. They probably didn't see them before they did their report, and we haven't really studied them in great detail. So we do have that. And one thing that I would like, Mr. Chairman, is to have the DPW, the new transportation director, give us some feedback about the bike lanes or not.
An excellent idea. Would you, Ms. Anant, and Ms. Kahn, speak to her about perhaps being here on the 29th? Because I think we have had discussion about, do we have the bike lanes here? We've heard about the Newtonville Area Council suggested perhaps Lowell Ave. I know I've at least asked a number of times about protected bike lane here, understanding the maybe feasibility issues there. So if we could have her here prepared to comment on all that, would that address your concerns?
It would. The one thing I want to say about that is that I guess there was a TAG meeting here just before, earlier this afternoon, and those folks were leaving, and they had a discussion about this project. And so, I mean, we could ask them to weigh in as well.
That'd be helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anything else?
Nope, thank
you. Okay. Councillor Fuller, then President Lennon, then Councillor Norton. And we are, folks, I know, Ms. Anand, I'm going to probably defer you to the next evening. I apologize, but I've got about four people, and I really want to finish up by 10. So go ahead.
I'll be fast.
I may not be, so go ahead.
First of all, I think it would be helpful to have the developer really go point by point in response to the Newtonville Area Council suggestions, many of which seem very attractive to me. I'd like to understand how you think about them. Second, I'm also struck by one of the comments, and this is perhaps for you, Alexandra, that I also haven't heard any discussion about this being so proximate to the historic district, and I'd just like to understand how the planning department thinks about that, whether that influences the zoning and or the site options, and your analysis would be helpful. Third and finally, I was struck by the community benefits discussion from the Newtonville Area Council. I actually think there's also a role for the city where appropriately asking the developer to think about a lot of things, but it strikes me that we as a city have a responsibility for thinking about and funding and planning the unification of the village and the train station accessibility, that this doesn't all fall on this developer, but we should be stepping up because it's good for all of our residents in Newtonville.
So can I just ask you a question on that, Councilor Fuller? Would you want Commissioner McGonigal to weigh in on that in this setting or not? And I want to be careful not treading on Councilor Crosby's committee.
So I don't know if it's planning more than DTW. I'm looking to Deb. I think this is a planning, and oddly enough, it's a Maureen Lemieux question because it's also saying we're going to help fund, let's say, a feasibility study, or when we do the beautification work, we're not just doing it on Walnut Street in South Newtonville, as if I've got the directions correct. That we're carrying it over to the north side and that we're thinking about it as a unified whole and we're influencing what this developer is doing. So
Can I just put this out there as a suggestion? Ms. Anand, would you be able to speak to Mr. Heath and maybe Ms. Lemieux and also Commissioner McGonigal about how, and be able to at least report back to us on the 29th about how we might weave in some of the Newtonville improvements that we've been talking about with this, whatever we approve here, whatever projects developed, I think there's a sense of trying to put this, getting the city involved. I hear that's what you're saying, Councilor Fuller. And I'm seeing Councilor Crosby nod her head in agreement. You may, please.
So I just want to strongly agree that this should come out of the planning department. We've recently been treated to some beginning plans called the transportation strategy and so forth, and we've been told that, you know, design standards are a piece of that, and of course we haven't seen that yet, and I would imagine the long-term goal is to set design standards for different districts in the city, and so I think that's what we're asking to hear about, sort of where does that stand, and time-wise, is that something that can, that we're ready to integrate into a
project. Yeah, I personally would like to see something a little bit more than broad visionary statements, and I'd actually like to see, okay, what is the preliminary plan for what Newtonville is going to look like, and how does it integrate with this development, how does that integrate with Austin Street, how does that integrate with other planned improvements? I think that would be beneficial, frankly, to the public. I think it would be beneficial to the developer. It would be good for the city. That's a really unfair task to put on you, but if you could at least give us some preliminary guidance, that'd be helpful. It does not, and I don't think we're asking for any kind of lengthy report at all. Maybe some bullet points, something that's short, because I know you have a lot already on your plate. On that point, Councilor Albright, and then I'm going to get the president.
I just want to add to that point. So the DPW has been promising the Newtonville Area Council for 6 months, I guess it is, that they would be starting the process of the hiring the consultant, which I think they have done back in August, and starting the process of the redesign of the Walnut Street area, which is supposed to be happening in 18. So that process should be underway tomorrow, which I don't know where it is, but they need to be part of this. It's not just planning, it's DPW.
Well, we don't have DPW here, so I'm going to ask Ms. Anand to at least be our, to convey that to DPW. Anything else, Councilor Fuller? You're all set. President Lennon and Councilor Norton.
Just in the essence of time, I think what you had requested earlier was the developer was looking for some feedback on the schematics. And if it were me, I would be going with option A to keep as much mass away from my... I appreciate that Councilor Albright saying I really think that the Foster Street maybe should be able to weigh in on what massing looks like and what landscaping looks like. However, if it were me on there, I would be saying try to keep as much mass away from Foster Street and as much as we could towards Washington Street. So I guess that would lead me to support option A if that helps the developer.
Okay, thank you, President Lennon. Councilor Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a few folks have offered a shout-out to the Early Council, but I want to offer a huge shout-out to the Early Council. And I think if you look at the level of detail that they went into, the amount of skill, the amount of background, the care that they took, I'm sure you will all agree with me that the Charter Commission should not eliminate Early Councils from our charter.
We'll save the editorial comments for later. Go ahead.
So, just very briefly, really appreciate the developer being responsive and offering a four-story option. There was a presentation, I think it was offered sponsored by Green Newton recently. Someone from Livable Streets Alliance spoke and said, quote unquote, density does not have to require high rises. So I think what we're seeing is that you can have more density and get to a lot of the goals that were presented by some of the speakers tonight, some of the members of the public, without having tall high rises. And I think that that would be more attractive to folks. And obviously, we are going to have a meeting with the Foster Street folks to get their impression, but I do appreciate the feedback. The other questions that have been asked, many of you, we already asked more information that we're going to get from the planning department and so on, so I'll leave it at that.
Councilor Lipoff?
Yeah, I too just want to give some feedback as to the options. B is not my favorite. I think A is fantastic with the prominence at the corner of the five stories and the undulation of the facade. If we do want to speak and consider the original plan, with five stories along Washington Street, not in anybody's backyard. I too appreciated the first one as well. And I think B is the most harmful to the Foster Street people, so that wouldn't even be a consideration for me.
Okay, thank you. Anything else, Councilor Lipoff? Councilor Cote, Councilor Auchincloss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I want to weigh in a little bit on that too, just to give some my thoughts on where I'm going with this. So originally I was more of a 3-4 story person, like way back a year ago. The concept came in, as Councilor Lipoff just mentioned, was up on Washington Street, so that kind of looks more attractive to the width of the street and in relation to the train tracks being on the other side. So then today coming in with the option B with the 4-story concept, initially seems attractive, but I got to kind of weigh in with Council President Lennon on this one, that you're mapping it towards the back of the property and the people's property on Foster Street and all that. So I'm kind of thinking that the A can be worked around, twisted around maybe a little bit. And the reason why I say this is I was out scouting around some of these different buildings that would have the staggered stories. And there's one down on Watertown Square, the apartment building on Galen in Watertown Street. And if you're sitting on the other side of the street coming from Starrow Drive and you look up, you can see that it's you know, it's like 4 or 5 stories, but they're staggered way back. So when you're sitting on the street looking over there, you literally only see 3 stories on the street. So I don't know if anybody else has noticed that building down there. So that when I see this concept of the 4 and the 5, 4 would be nice and 3 still would be nicer, but I think the 4 or 5 concept is a little bit more attractive as far as the back end, the mapping along Foster Street. And I think that would be the concern if I'm a neighbor, where you're really getting into the residential neighborhood, you want to give them less of an impact and keep the impact up on the you know, Washington Street and on the train tracks. So that's my way. That's my 2 cents on that one.
Councilor Auchincloss?
Yeah, I'll very quickly concur with a lot of my colleagues. Option A is preferable. I won't speak too much more on that because I already have. I just want to ask for next meeting, if not sooner, if the planning department could weigh in on the feasibility of what the Newtonville Area Council recommended with the access to the Newtonville rail station via Washington Street. It was an eye-raising idea. I don't know if it's viable or not. I can imagine there's a lot of red tape and a lot of cost associated with that, but I would be interested just for another vantage point.
Other comments by colleagues? I'll offer just a few observations, and I think we're going to close this evening. I go back to an observation that I've made on a number of occasions now, but I'm going to repeat it, and maybe I'm the only one on this committee who feels this way, but I remain extremely concerned about the fact that for a very large project in the dead center of a village center, in a city with very limited business areas, we're not really adding any commercial area. In fact, we're decreasing it. we are not adding any commercial space here when you look at the existing amount of commercial space. And I just reiterate to my colleagues and to the public, that's a huge issue for this city in my mind going forward as we look at our tax base. We are very heavily dependent in the city on our residential real estate taxes, and our commercial tax base, by definition, provides more money to the city coffers, and we have a tremendous number of needs in the city, particularly in infrastructure. So I remain really concerned about that, and this project in that regard concerns me. I've heard the commentary about commercial Class A is really not financially feasible, but then again, I'm told I shouldn't be looking at the pro formas. So when I'm looking at the aesthetics of the project, what the city needs, what I think is going to actually create a vibrant Newtonville, I think a true mix of uses would be more beneficial. And right now with this project, we don't have a true mix of uses. We have residential, we have retail, but we have nothing in between. So my personal observation, again, colleagues, if I'm a lone voice in that, that's fine, and I'll certainly can be persuaded, but I want to put that out there. A couple of other comments because I want to provide some feedback. I thought the new mayor council's commentary was superb. I was particularly struck by the comments about the community space and whether that really is a good use of real estate here or not. And I, for one, would be open to other uses rather than just creating something we call, quote-unquote, a community space. There are lots of spaces in the city where groups can gather. The library is available for many groups. You can certainly rent out school facilities. I just wonder if that's the best usage for this area. I share Councillor Crosley's observations about roof line and what the roof look like. That's why I probed a little bit more, frankly a lot more, what that's going to look like, whether it's four stories or not. I do think having some variation, perhaps the corners, like you did on the buildings in Newtonville, like to get at Masonic Temple, I believe, building, where there's some interesting artistic detail, I think goes a long way towards making a more interesting project and would help a great deal alleviate what otherwise is a very large, now three buildings, but I think it's worth a lot of study and a lot of consideration. Personally, on a final note, I lean more towards the four stories rather than the five, but I am concerned about the mass at the back of the building. I need to frankly think about it more. My colleagues have been actually quite persuasive in making me rethink some of my observations there. So that ends my observations. Is there anything else that we can provide or want to provide either to the planning department or to the developer? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to adjourn, but Ms. Anand, I'm going to suggest that you go first next time since we really do need your input. I think it would be very valuable. If you want to put some of these thoughts in writing for us in advance so that we can give some thought to what your thinking is, that'd be very helpful. And with that, we're going to meet again on the 29th, and I promise you, President Lennon, that Councillor Schwartz and I will work out a schedule for the remainder of it. Thank you all. Good evening.